It's showtime.
Cade, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this, the fifth day of November 2019. First Tuesday of November 2019. First full week of November. First full week of Tuesday. No, Bob, no. It's been a long day, hasn't it, Bob? Why, yes, as a matter of fact, it has. But no, it's the first full week of November 2019. And as with every program here at Ye Olde Horn, well, we have thanks to extend. Thanks very kindly to Kevin in Colorado Springs. Thank you to Kenda in Missouri. Thank you, Roberto. And thank you to James in Illinois. Those are our subscribers for the fifth day of the month. Thank you one and all for being partial sponsors of the program. Of course, this program exists because of the goodwill of the people who want it to continue to exist. We are lacking in any drug ads using pop classics from days gone by, among other things. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Got some good news. Bird is home. So that much is... That flaming barbed wire hoop has been leapt through. And, well, onward to the next flaming barbed wire hoop. And, Jesus, there's a bunch of them. It's a circus worth. But Brother Deacon Asa tells me that we are hot on both decks aboard the USS Trumptanic. Let's sink this ship so we can own the libs. Because, you know, you can hear it happening, can't you? Yeah, we're going to run this into an iceberg just to own the libs. It is Titanic Tuesday, Trumptanic Tuesday, named for something that our buddy Jim just recently turned 74, heard oh so many years ago now on local right-wing radio here in America's fifth smallest radio market, Beckley, West Virginia. Morning Monotone, who has since gone to his long home, took a call from one of the mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing followers who asked him why there were seashells in the rock strata, the sandstone deep beneath the surface of the earth here in West Virginia. To which he answered that, well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates. And thus was Titanic Tuesday born, a rousing celebration, or at least notation, of the massive Titanic sink the ship to own the libs intellect that informs the white wing in America. God, So that's, you know, we still don't have any word on the whereabouts of the Titanic hand crank burr coffee grinder, but we remain hopeful. Fundraising goal for the evening. Again, we talked about it, and we will consider it throughout the course of the month. Perhaps by the end of the month, I will have been told to piss off again by healthcare.gov, and will have been told that I am far too much a Jed Clampett for Medicaid, and then we'll try to sort something out. But nothing's going to happen with the fundraising goal until December at the very least. But here we are. Last night we had a $200 fundraising goal. We have a $200 fundraising goal. We have a $200 fundraising goal for every broadcast, except for fundraising free radio at the end of the month. And so, last night was a goose egg. And so we got $400 to go this evening here in the first full week of November 2019. So if we could get some of that knocked out, it would be great. And yeah, because I know this week I've got doctoring and pharmaceuticals to pick up, and then next week, hey, it's cheap blood work Wednesday at the clinic. So it won't, you know, that way you can get like your fasting blood sugar and your lipids profile and all of that stuff. And you know, it's only $150 or something. Cheap blood work Wednesday. That's all out in front. But anyway, the fundraising goal is $400. And by the way, welcome back to the air to our friends over at FYINation.com. They are back up and broadcasting, and I presume I'm actually being heard on FYI Nation at this point in time. So that's, well, maybe we'll knock it down over the course of the evening. Had an interesting note from Dave. Subject line, a little story from a listener. This email is apropos of nothing going on in your life, but I find it interesting how diamonds are found in the dirt. I wished I was a better writer, but that didn't help any, as you're about to see. Well, I'll see, you'll hear, and know there's nothing to complain about. Dave says, my wife has a middle management position at an ever-merging chain of Catholic healthcare facilities. The latest iteration of leadership has renamed all their worker bees, from doctors to lab assistants to groundskeepers, caregivers, and their job description a ministry. See, you got to use that voice. Caregiver and ministry. In an effort to manufacture a sense of community. Like most hierarchies, this one holds secret meetings for those individuals deemed worthy. I'll add editorially, I'll bet there's even a secret handshake and a high sign. Through lavish immersive indoctrination, the intent is to transform the self-motivated worker bees into effective leaders. It is prudent to not use the name of this particular enclave of enlightenment, as a Google search would reveal too much. This particular transformation has the pretense of claiming to reflect the ethos of the nuns that founded these ministries. I was able to observe the proceedings at times, and my spouse would fill in the missing pieces at the end of the day. Managers must buy into the narrative. If they don't, they will find themselves marginalized and then excused from service. They don't talk about that part much. Stripping away the exorbitance designed to make attendees feel extra special about themselves, here's my simple parable of this year's edition of Corporatocracy in Action. Imagine that you lived your adult life rolling north and south on the rails and living in a flyover state. I've spent most of my life in that circumstance, so I don't have to imagine very hard. At least the flyover state part, not the rolling on the rails part. Working on the Kansas City Southern, you finally get that job as a brakeman on the KC to Houston loop. At Shreveport, a man boards the train and calls the crew together. He says, As of right now, my partner and me own this line. This train is now headed to California nonstop. You, my friends, have choices. You can get off the train. You can ride the train to California and get off the train there. You can work your job while we roll west. You'll be fired when we get to California. If you'd rather spend your time riding this train with your hand out looking to grab a hold of every person with fire in their eyes and pull them aboard, I want to get to know you personally. You're going to be my personnel managers. There's no debate, no Q&A. Decide. The new owners then sat down to watch. Most of the workers got off the train. Only two of them decided to go to California. One of those two was a woman that sat down at an open freight car door of the rolling train. Knowing they were too understaffed to make it to L.A., she collected four bystanders who had always dreamed of being on the train instead of watching it go by. In spite of all the odds, this collection of humanity got the train to California. The newcomers were offered an education in operating trains and permanent positions with the Southwest train monopoly. The combined railroad line prospered, and everyone that rode the first train to California was as happy as a clam at high tide. That's a good one. They all felt gratitude for a single person's efforts during the journey. End fairy tale, or lesson. This allegory is a horror show when one realizes it's about health care. But that isn't the point. The takeaway is supposed to be that there are continual opportunities to create a positive impact if one puts himself in a place to do so. In the case of the story above, while the helping hand woman was feeding newcomers to the monster, she was also making dreams come true. She was trying to make the best of a bad situation, not for herself, but for everyone above and below. Just like our heroine, every weekday at 6 o'clock you ride by with a strong grip, waiting to grasp those wanting to go to a place of truth and community. You and Frontier Communications own this train, however. Now, I thank you for the morsels of keen insight, the political takes, the Bill O'Brien show, the personal stories, and those treasures we know as the head-on radio network callers. We, the low thousands of the Horn congregation, gather those morsels in. Thanks to you, we're riding that train. I'm glad you're around. You make my life so much better. Well, thank you, Dave. Thank you very, very kindly. I don't really think of this as being an ownership sort of thing. And to suggest that Frontier does actually anything at all, short of providing 10 down and maybe on a good day with a tailwind downhill, one up, that's as far as they go. But this is a community. It's always been a community. And so I don't, you know, I for the life of me, I can't think of this project as a capitalist enterprise. I just can't. Because, you know, big-time capitalist broadcasters have things like jets and boats and servant staff who take cigar boxes with thousands of dollars in them out and come back with cigar boxes full of street-level opioids that the gajillionaire host can then chew up for the refreshing burst of flavor. But thank you, Dave. More than anything, I'm sorry for the... I hate corporate boosterism. It's like, for those of you who know Mike Judge's Office Space, Jennifer Aniston's flair from her... her table waiting job. And of course, remember that word ministries is in there to support a 501c3 designation, because it's all tax free. Hallelujah. Not for profit does not mean not for wealth. That's why I try to refer to what we do here a little bit differently, as in non-capitalism. So, like I said, things are a little bit more stable here than they were yesterday, and hopefully they'll be more stable tomorrow than they were today. Along the way, it would be nice if this headache went away. I'm told by Lauren out on the far frozen front range in Albertistan that... The headache is probably stress. And I'm also told by Lauren that it's already brutally, hatefully cold and I should count my freaking blessings. I will do that in an entirely non-religious fashion. Frontier, says Jim. A string and two tin cans. Ugh. And the sad thing is the cable internet is, they offer, or they say they provide a hell of a lot higher bandwidth, but it's not consistent, at least not here. So, Titanic intellect, you say? Why, yes, as a matter of fact, I do. And lest I make a horrible mistake, a reminder, of course, the usual conversation is taking place in the chat room over at headon.live. If you'd like to be part of it, just run on over, because longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky has folded space, being a third stage guild navigator, to become Man Cave. And Anatole and Squeaky have wandered by. More may wander by later. It's more fun when there's more folks. Ah, tchotchkes. I don't know what I said. That was 2 minutes ago. Tchotchkes. Thank you, Asa. But we've got Titanic intellect too. Oh, and by the way, just a little program note. Either tomorrow or Friday or Wednesday. Either tomorrow or Thursday. Still working on learning those days of the week. Either tomorrow or Thursday, we'll probably be chatting with my good friend and our good friend, Dan Fisher. He wanted to check. It's his monthly check-in time. So we'll be... I'm looking forward to that. We always have a blast. There was a fascinating article that, Martin Scorsese has gotten him. He invigorated the ire of some people, let's say, because he made some remarks about the Marvel Universe movies that didn't sit well with the Marvel fan folk. Hopefully, I think we're going to be talking about that some. And, of course, some of the things that Dan has worked on with the new Apple TV network are coming to fruition. He may be able to talk about that a little bit, too. But it's Titanic Tuesday, and we celebrate Titanic intellect. Most of the time, it's right-wing, white-wing, Republican, you know, birther, deather, ninth or tenther, bagger, bircher, booger-eater, maggot, Trumpansy, libertarian kind of right. Every now and then it gets generic, though. This is one of those evenings. And we'll take as our jumping-off point something that is not earth-shattering so that we can ease into the Titanic-ness. And in this particular instance, I'm talking about black cats. We've got a black cat here. She's a rescue. She was feral. She's in her third year, and she's almost civilized. And we love her dearly. And so, lo and behold, last night we were watching the Giants-Cowboys game live from wherever it is that the Giants play football in the greater tri-state area. And I assume by tri-state we mean New Jersey, New York, and Pennsylvania. Is that the tri-state that they're talking about? When all of a sudden a black cat went running onto the field of play. And the call was hilarious. Kevin Harlan managed to work in a plug for one of the broadcast sponsors. And he called it as the cat ran down and lingered around the 2-yard line and then ran into the end zone. That's not the Titanic part. The Titanic part is the response of the fans. Now, remember, we're talking about a New York Giants squad that is, or was at the beginning of the game, 2-6. And a Dallas Cowboys team, beloved, of course, of our dear friend John Britovo, that doesn't suck quite so much. If you had the Giants and the points going into that game, you probably knew going in that you were going to be separated from your money. So the likelihood of the Giants winning that football game were not good. But that's okay. The Giants had an early lead, 12-3, 12-6, 12-9. And it was after they had gotten the field goal or driving for the field goal that would put them up 12-3 that the Black Cat ran out. And then, of course, by the time they got to the half, it was 13-12. And then it went on to be like 38-17 or something. It was not a good night for the Giants, but seldom are there any good nights for the Giants. 37-18, the final score. The Giants managed to add a touchdown in the second half. Jabril Peppers asked about the black cat, said, "I ain't superstitious or nothing, but anytime I saw a black cat or it went across me growing up, something bad happened. I kind of grew out of it now, but I still don't like them. I wasn't going to go out there and get it." Well, okay. DeMarcus Lawrence said, "I ran. I don't like cats." Jerry Jones, the owner of the Dallas Cowboys, said, "I know he was looking at me the whole time he was out there. Things did kind of change when that black cat came." You know, it is so bizarre that here in the waning years of the second decade of the 21st century of the Common Era, there are still people out there that hold some degree of superstition about black cats or walking under ladders or stepping on cracks. And black cats are killed every year just for being black cats. Well, it turns out everybody wanted to know. Some of the Cowboys squad wanted to take the black cat home. They thought he was luck, or she, I don't know. I was waiting for it to go to the goalpost in the end zone and stand up and start scratching and just shred the padding around the goalpost. I mean, but they're going to. And so Giants fans, and amazing enough to me, there are Giants fans. But then again, when your other team is the Jets, well, J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets. When your other team's the Jets, I guess that maybe the Giants look pretty good most of the time. But there are, really, no kidding, people who think that somehow or another that black cat that lives in the Giants' home stadium jinxed the Cowboys. Or jinxed the Giants, rather. Anything to keep, I suppose, from acknowledging terrible execution, generally poor play, things like that. But it's Titanic, and it gets the ball rolling. And kudos to Steve Servi at the New York Post for declaring that the Giants did kind of look catatonic once the cat headed for the bleachers. You got to show, you got to have a little bit of love for a good pun, catatonic. But it gets us started before we have to get into the madness. So here's hoping, here's hoping they'll just leave that poor cat alone. Now, after the program closed last night, before I could do the things that I had to do, because we knocked off a little early last night, when the program closes, I sit and I do the upload for Podbean and iTunes and White Rose and all of that stuff. By the way, you're podcasting home for this program. The easiest way, if you like the program and delay, instead of just running hither and thither to this platform or that platform, just go to headon.live and click on the link there. It says podcast. And you'll find there just about every... A means to find just about every to take the podcast any possible way you'd want, and that's all courtesy of Brother Deacon Asa. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Yeah, okay. Thank you for getting into the game. That goes out to Squeaky. It was a catastrophe for the Giants. Yeah, I know. Jim, black cats, never met a cat I didn't like or love. What horse shit? Yes, the horrible fate of said beautiful felines is dreadfully true. The heart is broken. Well, I hope they just leave that poor cat alone, because they did, naturally, the sports journalist said, they went to the grounds crew and said, can you tell us about the cat? And they go, oh, yeah, we got a shit ton of them. We feed them. We take care of them. They live in the tunnels. They hide during the day. Leave them alone. Billable Rick, black cats. Bob, I can't understand why so many people are afraid of black cats. I actually find them to be a harbinger of good luck. I had a black cat named Gizmo who lived to be almost 20 years old, a huge part of my former life. I think that's life, not wife. Is that a Freudian slip, Billable Rick? A huge part of my former life died when Gizmo passed over the Rainbow Bridge. Someone should have told the Giants players, it's not about the cat. It's, oh my God, they found it. He found a way to. It's not about the cat. It's the lousy quality of your team's play. Non est de felem. So true. So true, Billable Rick. Well, thank you. Thank you, Lady B. We appreciate everything you do. You bust your ass 5 nights a week, and it has not gone unnoticed. We also know that you need to take an occasional break to catch your breath and hold your family together. Do what you must. We don't expect you to work on Saturdays, for fuck's sake. Those TPS reports, on the other hand. Yours with at least 15 pieces of flair, Lady B. Oh, yeah. We're off and rolling. This is a good one. I think it's going to be. Ah, flair, tchotchkes. Now it's all coming together. And thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. I'm a little slow on the uptake. But at any rate, what's that? Flavio says, I heard said black cats are the souls of witches burned at the stake come back to haunt us. One of my sisters has two cats, one black and one Russian blue, Shady and Miko. Miko is the most loquacious and always greets me when I'm over. Shady, the black cat, is rather aloof and doesn't give a shit. But when one night I was watching a movie with my sister and her hubby, Shady curled up on my lap and fell asleep. We bonded. He still doesn't say hi, but I understand. Cats, like people, all have personalities of their own. Yeah, Little Nix, named after some god of chaos, Little Nix is not particularly chatty, but we'll come up and look you in the eye and purr like a Lamborghini engine idling. Lady B, Brother Deacon Asa wants you to know it's a minimum of 16 pieces of flair, not 15. Oh, Jesus. And this is now we'll be going through this all night. I bring up black cats. Everybody has a black cat story. Randy in PA says, I had a black cat named Spooky. It still brings me to tears when I think of her passing because I miss her. Well, you know, I think we have an overly narrow definition of people, the word people. Because cats are people, too. And dogs are people. And cockatiels are people. And, you know, Siamese fighting fish, bettas or whatever, they're people. Or maybe the planet is the people. And, you know, we're the sort of, moles and underarm hairs and stuff that, yeah, there goes dinner in the Eastern Standard Time Zone. Thank you. We are going into the cesspit. We are. I'm just giving everybody a chance to get their hip waders on. Make sure all the holes are patched and everything. Because it just keeps getting worse. That was very James Kirkish, wasn't it? You just keep missing the mark. Con! Steve in New York says, hey, Bob, what's happening? Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and put a $10 challenge out there. Okay. So, $10 challenge on the table. It'll get us off the schneid, get us away from the $400 deficit. Thank you. Thank you, Brother Steve. No, like I said, now that we're all in good shape, we'll wander into the cesspit. What I was saying earlier is I didn't stick around very long last night. I had to go, but while I was doing the upload, I did take one for the team, and I continued to listen to the maggot rally from Kentucky Stan. And really, there's not that much to report. We noted the big highlight last night, the Read the Transcript t-shirts, reminiscent of the Time Life book series on unexplained mysteries of the world. Read the book. Of course, proof of the fact that none of the maggots have actually read the document lies in the fact that no one with two functioning brain cells to rub together would put on a t-shirt that says read the transcript having looked at the document that says at the top of the document, this is not a transcript. But I watched, and he's just getting worse. And he's getting worse because the walls are closing in. As noted, he lost in the Second Circuit. Ruth Bader Ginsburg is going to be in charge of the petition for cert that he will lodge with the Supreme Court relative to the Second Circuit's order telling his accountants to honor the damn subpoena that was served on them. And just from a strictly analytical viewpoint, if you start carving out exceptions to subpoenae like this, then it's not long before the sand washes out from under the foundation of everything we consider our legal system to be. Flawed, deeply flawed, though it is. So it would be funny if Ruth Bader Ginsburg got to announce, nah, we're not going to hear this. The Second Circuit's order stands. And if Mazars wants to continue being a going concern, they'll have to answer the subpoena. And, well, Donald Trump can sue him till hell freezes over, but he's got not a leg to stand on. And it is, according to people inside the White House, the business of his taxes it's got him somewhere near to an effect, the same sort of effect that Ex-Lax has. In fact, if we sat down, we could probably, rhyming taxes and Ex-Lax has, come up with a pretty damn good limerick. We would have to start out, you know, there once was a moron named Trump. We don't have time for that right now. As Jim says, Trump in Kentucky last night, another trip into whatever one deems disgusting. Yeah, it's creepy and scary because his mind is going to pieces. But alongside him, he has people working who are just plain nasty little racists, bigots, and xenophobes. For this first foray into the cesspit, I have to think that Pee Wee Herman Goering, namely Stephen Miller, is responsible for this one. It's disgusting. And it is as typically racist as one might expect. In order to understand it, however, we need to go back to, let's say, 2016 and the month of November 2016. And a proclamation from then-President Barack Obama. The opening paragraph of said proclamation, having to do with the month of November 2016, said, "As the first Americans, Native Americans, have helped shape the future of the United States through every turn of our history. Today, young American Indians and Alaska Natives embrace open-ended possibility and are determining their own destinies. During National Native American Heritage Month, we pledge to maintain the meaningful partnerships we have with tribal nations, and we renew our commitment to our nation-to-nation relationships as we seek to give all our children the future they deserve." It goes on at some length and closes, "This month, let us celebrate the traditions, languages, and stories of Native Americans and ensure their rich histories and contributions can thrive with each passing generation. Let us continue to build on the advancements we have made, because enduring progress will depend on our dedication to honoring our trust and treaty responsibilities. With sustained effort and unwavering optimism, we can ensure a vibrant and resilient Indian country filled with possibility and prosperity. Now, therefore, I, Barack Obama, yada, 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 vested by the Constitution, November 2016, as National Native American Heritage Month." We do this to sort of counterbalance the now recognizably odious mythology surrounding the Thanksgiving holiday. I'm of a certain age, so I remember being a little bitty kid and tracing the outline of my hand, both left and right. It was more of a challenge to trace my right hand because I'm right-handed, and so doing it with the left hand, that turkey didn't. And then you make a turkey out of it, and you draw the feathers and the little beard and the waddle and the and put legs on it. And happy Thanksgiving from the first grade class of Mrs. Lander's room in 1969. Yeah. And back then it was all about, we were told, you know, stories of the noble savages, who kindly kept the pilgrims from starving to death. Left out was the fact that the pilgrims were religious maniacs on a par with, ISIS. Yeah. Left out was the genocide. Left out was the fact that the first Thanksgiving proclamation, I believe signed by William Bradford of the Massachusetts Bay Colony, was actually a declaration of thanksgiving to Almighty God for delivering up the heathen savages to be slaughtered by the white people. It's all there. It exists. But what with the still federally recognized odious Columbus Day coming in October, and the pilgrim mythology of Thanksgiving in November, Barack Obama's administration took a step toward recognizing and being inclusive with the indigenous community in mind during this particular month. It was a good thing, even if, as I recall correctly, the Standing Rock people, the Standing Rock Sioux people and their allies were being screwed by the Keystone XL pipeline people, who, by the way, have leaked, you know, a few hundred thousand barrels of bitumen crude onto the land that the Standing Rock Sioux were trying to more or less protect, not just their land, but all the land. They were getting screwed at the time this proclamation was issued, but the proclamation is at least right in its spirit. Well, that's all over. Because remember, anything that Barack Obama did must be undone. And so consequently, the declaration recognizing Native American Month, Native American Heritage Month, well, that's gone now. Yeah, it's nasty. We went from recognizing Native Americans to this.
Over 243 years ago, our founders gathered in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, at Independence Hall. You know, I went to Wharton. And I was an honor roll student there, even though nobody can find the grades, and my professors all said I was a fucking idiot. To sign the Declaration of Independence, enshrining in the heart of every American a bedrock principle that all men are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. Throughout our nation's history, countless men and women have boldly defended this principle, except for the fact that between 1787. And about 1860, the Declaration of Independence was largely forgotten. You should if you want the full story on that, you should maybe tune in to Dr. Bill one of these days. Call in and ask him to tell you the story of how Abraham Lincoln resurrected the Declaration of Independence. So even that statement is a bald-faced lie.
Throughout our nation's history, countless men and women have boldly defended this principle, often making the ultimate sacrifice on battlefields here and in every corner of the world, from overthrowing tyrannical rule in the Revolutionary War to liberating Europe from Nazi control during World War II.
Yeah, probably this is not the proclamation for them to mention the Russian contribution to the war in Europe.
The United States will always remain steadfast in our dedication to promoting liberty and justice over the evil forces of oppression and indignity.
And it goes on from there with a bunch of bilious carbonated pop.
To continue safeguarding our freedom, we must develop a deeper understanding of our American story, studying our country's founding documents and exploring our unique history, both the achievements and challenges. On this inaugural National American History and Founders Month,
he erased the Native Americans.
I encourage all citizens to reflect upon the defining tenets that have always united us as Americans, which I couldn't tell you one of, while also taking time to honor those who have contributed to the great story of our country, and they were all white and male. As Americans, may we forever strive to preserve their legacy for generations to come. This is disgusting.
This is outright racism and pure 200-proof
white supremacy. Add putting Native American Heritage Month back into November onto the list of the other 52,615 things we've got to take care of starting on November the 20th, 2021, if we get our shit together. Really? Now, just because, see, going back to long before he was president, Donald Trump, whose people weren't even on this continent, whose people haven't been here on this continent for much more than 100 years at best. I mean, remember, Mary McLeod came from that little gene pool on that forlorn little Scottish island, the gene pool that's so shallow if you dropped a piss ant in it, it wouldn't even need a fucking snorkel. She came here in the 1920s, husband hunting on a tourist visa. In other words, illegal immigrant. And then there's Frederick Christ Trump, Donald's Klansman daddy, and Donald's grandfather, who was the first one here, who tried to go back home because his wife hated it here, but they wouldn't let him stay in Germany because he was a draft-dodging dirtbag. And so he doesn't really have any call to hate Native Americans, but he hates them because money. Because once upon a time, he had to compete with Native Americans over gaming licenses. And if you actually want to waste the precious finite time of your life searching for it, you can find him testifying before somebody about the mean, terrible, bad, no good, really awful Indians who were keeping him from being a successful gambling operator. And how they were getting special treatment. And so the grudge goes that far back. And while he doesn't have much of a memory for anything else, he can remember the things he hates. And so it was early in his presidency that the remaining heroes of the Navajo Code Talkers were compelled to stand in front of a portrait of the one white man despised more by Native Americans than any other white man, Andrew Jackson, while he regaled them with critiques of Pocahontas. And of course, one of the central features, not flaws, gutting Grand Staircase Escalante and Bear's Ears National Monuments out in Utah was specifically to shit on indigenous people. And of course, he'd like to drill the living bejesus out of any native land that he could appropriate for his cronies and his fossil fool friends. He's trying to pull native lands out of the National Trust. As recently as 2018, a thing called Tara Sweeney, a maggot appointment, Assistant Secretary for Indian Affairs, started the process of taking the Mashpee Wampanoag land in Massachusetts out of the National Native Trust. And so instead of taking note of the profound contributions of the people who were here for over 10,000 years before the first sleazy Trump arrived on these shores, this adipose wad of jiggling insecurity, petty jealousy, and hate, slapped, shat on the indigenous people of this country. Oh, I'm sorry. I got that wrong. Thank you for the correction, Irwin. Dakota Access Pipeline was it was the DAPL, not the Keystone. It carries highly volatile Bakken oil fracked in North Dakota. The Keystone carries Alberta tar sands goop. Irwin says, I was told that the route for the Dakota Access was changed because it might endanger the drinking water of Bismarck. Exactly. They ran it through native land because the white folks didn't want it. yeah, adding further to the sort of deconstruction of the Pilgrim Thanksgiving narrative, Jim notes, and the Mayflower didn't smell like one. And talk about your huddled masses. Going back to, and I mean, when you hear racism and nationalism on that level, that's just got that's got Stephen Miller written all over it. I've been thinking, Stephen New York says, apparently Joseph Goebbels II, I mean Stephen Miller, is apparently dating a female human. I was wondering if their children will have webbed feet or cloven hooves, you know, because I'm a caring kind of guy. Well, that's that scene from the first Men in Black where Tommy Lee Jones looks at Reg and says, well, congratulations, Reggie. It's a squid. And the alleged human female is some sort of spokes creep out of the vice president's office. And, oh, I'm sure they're just waiting, hoping for that second term so that their little spawn, their little gits, can go and add a brick to the wall at Halloween. Word-knowing suggestion coming from Brother Deacon Asa. Bob, may I suggest a word that will save you some time, precious breath, and when referring to the birchers, birthers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, booger eaters, maggots, trumpansies, and other sundry slime? How about we start referring to them as the illiterati? That'll cover the entire spectrum. I like working the entire panoply just to make it clear how broad and deep their hate and stupidity runs. Oh, Ron, of course. Ron and Raleigh says, you did hear Obergruppenfuhrer Miller. I still like Pee-wee Herman Goering myself. Is about to tie the knot. I imagine he'll soon be putting the lotion on her skin, my friends. Or else it gets the hose again. I can make your life a living hell. And, one more visual, just because it's Titanic Tuesday and we get to do these sorts of things. I haven't seen any notes from anyone saying, by the way, my vision was negatively impacted because I happened across ABC last night. Because I didn't mean to see it. Honest Pete, I did not mean to see it. And Agnes and I saw it at the same time, and she just grabbed my hand. You know, kind of like you do in a movie theater when you're waiting for, like, the head to come rolling like a bowling ball out of the closet or something. We saw a clip of Sean Spicer in a sailor suit from Dancing with the Stars. It was one of those moments. It was Spock. It was Spock doing the Vulcan mind meld with the Horta and just, pain, pain. It's past description. And I realized in that moment the reason they cast him on Dancing with the Stars was because they knew it would create outrage. Because outrage is a big dollar. Even if people, you know, boycott ABC. No such thing as bad PR. Uh-uh. No. Oh, it's true. Now, Stephen New York, clarification. The reason I call Stephen Miller Joseph Goebbels is because they look like each other. And provides a side-by-side comparison, and I cannot disagree. And that's very true, Jim reminding us. On 23 April 1939, Adolf Hitler made direct reference to America's subjugation of the Indian tribes in an effort to mock Roosevelt and justify his own policies of horror. He sure did. You can probably find it out there with a translation. Oh, yeah, they just laughed and guffawed. He was, as Jim says, mocking FDR. For Billable Rick, Lady B writes, pretend I sent you the gif of Orson Welles performing slow, sustained clapping for the Not About the Cat reference. You're in a category by yourself. Category, see, I. It would be a cataclysmic catastrophe if you weren't part of this show. There would be much caterwauling. Anyway, hopefully we can catapult Bob to liberal internet radio stardom. I hope others will claw onto the opportunity to listen to his show. Tell your friends to emerge from their catacombs and join us in the listening fun. I know some folks move as slowly as a caterpillar. I can't understand that. Me, I run out and listen to him every chance I get. Anyway, I'm glad the cat is safe. I feel like I would have helped chase the cat safely off the field. But why must I feel like that? Must be the dog in me. Bow wow wow, yippee yo yippee yay. That's just, you know, some of these notes that Lady V sends, work goes into them as though it's like brush strokes on a great painting. So I'm going to try really, really hard to get the visual of Sean Spicer in that little sailor suit out of my mind. And then we're going to get down to the nasty business of the rest of the program. Because there is no amount of nasty business available in the rest of the program. But being as how it's a Tuesday, let's take a minute and check in with Brad and Desi. And see what kind of burr they got under their saddle, shall we? And remember, we're $400 down for the first full week of November. So if we could Get off that schneid, and remember, there's a $10 challenge courtesy of Steve in New York. So if somebody's got 10 bucks, they'd like to match it, we can get it down to 380, and that would be great. Brad and Desi.
It's Tuesday, November 5, 2019.
I withdrew the United States from the terrible one-sided Paris Climate Accord. It was a total disaster for our country.
Nope, the U.S. is still in the Paris Climate Agreement, for now.
Work has finally gotten underway to clean up this massive oil spill just north of Edinburgh.
Yep, another significant oil spill on the Keystone Pipeline, plus...
It is the year 2019. Why is the world still ignoring the science and those most affected by this crisis?
Swedish teen climate activist Greta Thunberg takes her climate action message to Los Angeles.
All of those messages and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Why are the people in power still pretending that everything is fine?
Because it is, Greta. For them, those folks are doing just great. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, who could have predicted it? But once again, thousands and thousands of gallons of oil spilled from the Keystone Pipeline.
Yes, in fact, everyone predicted it. Cleanup operations are underway after the Keystone Pipeline spilled again late last week. This is the original Keystone Pipeline, not the controversial extension called the Keystone XL, which is still delayed in court. The new spill on the original Keystone dumped 400,000 gallons of sticky tar sands crude oil, smothering an acre of wetlands in northeastern North Dakota.
Now, this is the same company which owns the what would be the Keystone XL pipeline that they tell us is the most advanced pipeline ever. It would never spill.
Yeah, and if you believe that, I'll just let you know that it's the second significant spill on the original pipeline in just the last 2 years.
Huh.
In climate news, at an oil industry conference in Pittsburgh a few weeks ago, President Trump told his usual lies about the United Nations Paris Climate Agreement and falsely touted that he had withdrawn from it. Nope, the U.S. is still in the Paris Agreement, even now. What the Trump administration did do was announce on Monday that it filed the paperwork to begin the process of formally withdrawing the U.S. from the Paris Accord, the landmark global agreement to reduce greenhouse gas emissions that cause dangerous man-made climate change. The process won't be completed until November 4th, 2020. That's the day after the 2020 presidential election.
As if the 2020 presidential election wasn't already critical enough.
If Trump loses, a new president could simply rejoin the agreement. Until then, the Trump administration will retain its seat at the UN climate talks this year and continue its attempts to monkey wrench the global rulemaking negotiations.
If there are global climate talks this year. Wasn't that supposed to be held in Chile, and weren't those recently canceled?
Chile bowed out of hosting this year's climate summit because of protests and civil unrest sparked by deepening economic inequality, but Madrid, Spain will now host the summit.
Oh, there you go. How's Greta Thunberg going to get there if she's got to go all the way back across the ocean?
That is an excellent question.
Thank you.
We'll get to her in a minute, but the U.S. is the only country on the planet to withdraw from the Paris Accord. However, as Trump is pulling the U.S. back from world leadership, China is stepping in. Reuters reports that the presidents of China and France this week will sign a new trade agreement that includes a paragraph on the, quote, irreversibility of the Paris Climate Agreement. Meanwhile, while firefighters in California are making headway controlling an outbreak of wildfires, President Trump still hasn't mentioned the first responders, but he did find time to criticize California Governor Gavin Newsom about his wildfire response. Trump insisted on Twitter that Newsom must, quote, clean the forest. Trump also threatened to cut off federal disaster relief funding to the state. Finally, Swedish teen climate activist Greta Thunberg traveled to Los Angeles to join the youth climate strike on Friday. Los Angeles Unified School District students were excused from classes if they attended the rally in downtown L.A., where Thunberg and other youth climate leaders called on the crowd to get active politically and demand politicians act on climate change.
There is a tomorrow. It is the tomorrow where we young people will live. And we need to fight for that tomorrow. And we need to protect it as if our lives depended on it. Because it does.
Thunberg also appeared on the Ellen DeGeneres Show, where she had this to say when Ellen asked her if she'd consider meeting with President Trump.
I don't understand why I would do that. I don't see what I could tell him that he hasn't already heard.
Yeah.
And I just think it would be a waste of time, really.
Yes, of course it would. He has access to the world's greatest climate scientists. He hasn't met with them, or at least if he has, he has completely ignored them. So why would he listen to Greta Thunberg? For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. And our thanks in advance to those of you who stopped by bradblog.com/donate to help us celebrate Green News Report's upcoming 1,000th episode. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Well, okay. I never really understood that song. I guess it's optimism that tomorrow will be better than today. Is that what it is? I don't know. By the way, Ron in Raleigh asks, Time Warp? Am I listening to an old episode of the 1966 Batman episode when Catwoman was the guest villain? It was a cataclysmic occurrence with every catty reference you can think of. We'll have to ask Lady B. Perfect. There, see, I can do it too. Hey, by the way, the stress line is paired to the Gizmo box. It's open. 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN. And, of course, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. And, you know, I mentioned the $400 fundraising hole. And it seems like if you'd like to help out, well, the interface is over at headon.live under contribute. And it sure would be nice to add a whole bunch of new subscribers. Because that way, more or less, we can count on things from week to week and month to month. But as it is, again, there's a $10 challenge on the table courtesy of Steve in New York. And with any luck at all, we will... We'll knock that out and then get busy on the other $380. So maybe we won't be looking at $600 tomorrow or $1,000 come Friday. Back to the cesspit. You know, I've been reading a book on the history of dueling. It's called Gentleman's Blood, and for such a grim and bloody topic, it's a pretty good historical romp concerning some really nasty business. But one of the things that it makes clear is it quotes extensively from the 1777 Code Duello that was promulgated in Ireland. And one of the things that struck me was that the language that's used in the Code Duello is not far from the sort of technical language or the writing for clarity. Hi, Clarity. The writing for clarity that takes place in the same temporal space in the Declaration of Independence 10 years later. In the Constitution, or for that matter, in the 1776 publication of Adam Smith's Wealth of Nations. To a modern reader, it seems very stilted and very formal, but what it represents is an attempt to be absolutely clear as to meaning. And this, of course, comes down to the present day to us in legal language. Because the goal of all legal drafting is to make the meaning of the law absolutely clear, because we understand that there are people out there who will bust their ass to make it anything but clear. I was sort of alluding to this earlier when I was talking about the laws concerning congressional subpoenas and subpoenas issued by courts of competent jurisdiction. Jay Sekulow, for instance, the president's lawyer, whom I would not trust to litigate a parking ticket, says that the White House is appealing, that Trump is appealing, that Trump is appealing, because there are serious constitutional issues raised by this, but there aren't. It is straightforward. It is a subpoena that has been issued by a court of competent jurisdiction in Manhattan, directed to a national or international accounting firm. And once you get past questions of, is that the party that the subpoena names? Yes. Were they properly served? Yes. Give up the goods. Because this sort of thing underpins the entire system. Because if any party can simply say, no, fuck you, man, then you don't have a legal system. You don't. But to go back to the code duello, well, we have a term that is still used from time to time in English, to give the lie to something. It doesn't mean to tell a lie, it means to accuse that a lie is being told. And the 1777 Irish Code Duello makes very clear that whatever the original affront is, sir, you are wearing a silly hat. You lie. When you say you lie, you have actually delivered an affront that is greater than the original insult. And the code duello then goes about setting forth how one can get out of that mess before swords get drawn, or by that time pistols get drawn, or how many times the combatants have to shoot at each other before they can say, okay, let's settle this. And some of that does come down to us in the modern era. One such instance is contained in the rules of evidence that are in use in most states and in federal practice. For instance, let's say you're being deposed. Well, not you, not me. Let's say a maggot is being deposed. And let's say that being as how the maggot is, well, a maggot, the maggot does what maggots do. And that is lies. Because this is an administration in which the far short of the two lists, lies told by members of this administration versus truths told by this administration, the list of truths is far shorter and would probably fit on a matchbook, whereas the list of lies, if you started writing it right now on one of those old teletype rolls from days gone by, you'd go through two or three cases just on, and, you know, they say that that's how Jack Kerouac wrote On the Road. He just fed one of those massive heavy rolls of teletype paper into a typewriter and speeding his brains out, started typing. But that's another story. So, yes, belie, as Flavio points out. Flavio, another past master practitioner of the art of word knowing. So, if you're a maggot and you're in a deposition and you get caught lying, grounded in that old rule of it's not nice just to call someone a liar to their face because somebody might pull out a saber and the next thing you know, blood is flowing, or, you know, pistols or whatever. Instead of having the lawyer look and say, Mr. Sondland, you're lying your ass off, because Gordon Sondland is the maggot liar who is the subject of this particular segment. Gordon Sondland, who was ambassador to the EU, an hotelier out of the Great Northwest, who said upon being asked by a reporter as he was entering the Capitol one day, "Sir, are you here to save your reputation?" answered, "I have no reputation to save." That was cute. And whom I suppose has this notion that when he's done bowing and scraping to Donald Trump, that he would like to go back to having a successful string of hotels in places like Seattle and Portland, which one would hope the Seattle and Portland folks are working on making sure doesn't exist, you know, drive them out of business. Well, Gordon Sondland proudly testified under oath,
there was no quid pro quo. I don't know anything about no quid pro quo.
And then other people came in and testified. And they said, oh, yeah, there was a quid pro quo. And he was up to his shiny chrome dome in it. Well, when you've been caught in a lie, the federal rules of evidence allow for something called refreshing the recollection, which is a sort of pretty and flowery language for, you caught me lying here. Let me see if I can dig myself out of this one. And so, sometimes the deposing lawyer will hand a document across and say, let the record reflect that I'm handing the witness plaintiff's Exhibit A, which is a document that shows that he just lied like a rug. Sir, does this document refresh your recollection? Which is a way of saying, are you sure you want to go to prison for perjury? And the witness looks at it and goes, I really don't want to go to prison for perjury. Sir, does this refresh your recollection? Why, yes, by Jove, it does. And now that your recollection has been refreshed, sir, would your testimony change anyway? Well, yes. So here's how it played out. When the transcripts were released from the secret closed-door hearings, generally speaking, depositions are not conducted in the food court at a fucking mall. You do them behind closed doors because you're trying to avoid interruptions and showboating, grandstanding, and bullshit like that, because it really doesn't come across well in a court reporter's transcript. I mean, you can't see that Jim Shorts Jordan is sitting there with no coat up. And it doesn't say, whereupon Jim Shorts Jordan was not wearing a coat and got red in the face and blustered and gesticulated all over creation. That's usually not in a deposition transcript. But the thing is, Kurt Volker, who was the former U.S. Special Representative for Ukraine negotiations, he came in and he testified. And he testified directly to the contrary of what Gordon Sondland had testified to. And in many ways, this is as big a deal in the Ukraine, in Ukraine Gate. Are we calling it Ukraine Gate yet? This is as big a deal in Ukraine Gate as finding out Nixon had the tapes was in Watergate. Well, it now turns out that, among other things, because of Volker's testimony, Ambassador Sondland, suddenly got his recollection refreshed, which necessitated him updating his testimony. Not correcting, it's just updating, because, you know, he forgot that part. The Gordon Sondland quote that no one will ever forget, Flavio says. He, Sondland, said, "You know, you need to go big or go home." This is what he said to Marie Yovanovitch. "You know, you need to go big or go home. You need to, you know, tweet out there that you support the president and that all these are lies and everything else." It was, and Marie Yovanovitch, having just testified to the committee in that regard, said, "It was advice that I did not see how I could implement in my role as an ambassador and as a foreign service officer." In other words, she was unwilling to go to prison for Donald Trump. So that was out there, too. You know, you need to balance scrape. You know how he loves being tweeted to. Tweet nice things about him, and maybe he won't suggest that, you know, you be murdered or something in your sleep. And so Sondland hopes now that he will not be going to prison instead of going back to being an hotelier. The New York Times reporting the disclosure from Gordon Sondland, namely that he told a top Ukrainian official that the country would not receive American military aid unless it made a public commitment to digging up dirt on the Bidens. Four new pages of sworn testimony released on, well, today, confirmed his involvement in laying out a quid pro quo to Ukraine that he had previously not acknowledged. So much for no quid pro bro. So much for read the transcript. Because not only in getting his recollection refreshed, did Gordon Sondland say, "Yeah, I forgot the part where I actually offered the quid pro quo." And it's not just a quid pro quo, it's another quid pro quo. If Volodymyr Zelensky wanted a meeting with Donald Trump, that he would have to read some words out loud. And so it was that Kurt Volker texted a Ukrainian official high in the government the script that they wanted read by President Zelensky. It read as follows. Special attention should be... Now, remember, they wanted the president of Ukraine to say this out loud in exchange for receiving aid that Congress had already appropriated, that Trump was then holding up in violation of the law. Now, we've moved from no quid pro quo to quid pro quo, so what, to, yeah, there was a quid pro quo, but I'm the president and the Constitution says I can do anything I want. That seems to be the fallback trench that the Republicans are in now. But judge for yourself. Here's what the maggots drafted that they insisted President Zelensky read. Now, we don't have the details yet, and I don't... The beautiful thing about Morse code is that it's the same in any... Something like SOS is the same in any language. Dot, 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 dash, 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 dot, dot, dot. No word yet on whether Zelensky pondered blinking that out with his eyelids. Special attention should be paid to the problem of interference in the political processes of the United States, especially with the alleged involvement of some Ukrainian politicians. I want to declare that this is unacceptable. You know, for having been drafted by somebody in the upper reaches of the maggot White House, I want to declare that this is unacceptable is kind of some... That's linguistically weird construction, isn't it? There's a difference. There's a significant difference in meaning between I want to declare and I do declare, or I declare. Not I do declare. No, I want to declare versus I declare. Want to denotes some contemplated action, as opposed to I declare is the action itself. So in what the maggots wrote, we get, I want to declare that this is unacceptable. We intend to initiate and complete a transparent and unbiased investigation of all available facts and episodes, including those involving Burisma and the 2016 U.S. elections, which in turn will prevent the recurrence of the problem in the future. There's only one problem. And it wasn't in the future, it was in the past. And that is that there is not one shred of evidence that Ukraine had anything to do with the meddling in the 2016 election. That was Mother Russia. You know, the enemy of Ukraine. It's somewhat reminiscent of the lie that was cooked up by the Third Reich in 1939, claiming that Poles had attacked a German border hut or station or something, and that that therefore gave casus belli to the Germans to launch the Blitzkrieg on Poland and send tank divisions rolling against horse-mounted Polish cavalry and Stuka dive bombers screaming from the skies to terrorize Polish villages as Blitzkrieg flashed across Poland. Putin knows his history. Flavio asks, isn't this extortion? Isn't Trump's threatening another government shutdown if the Dems don't cut it out with the impeachment inquiry extortion, another quid pro quo? Practically, I think the argument can be made that this man commits an impeachable offense every time he opens his mouth now. And that's because his entire life has been one long, rolling criminal enterprise. He doesn't know how not to be a criminal. But ancillary to Flavio's observation, this script, which is the quid for which the quo is the aid, and the Republicans are now saying, well, they've got the money now, so, you know, fuck, what? But this quid for that quo, I know we like to use words like extortion, but if we are going to talk about impeachment in an intelligent fashion, we have to use constitutional language. I mean, extortion is a crime. And so the minute you start talking about a crime, you get lost in the morass of the meanings of criminal statutes when, as Dr. Bill so patiently and plainly explained on Monday, you need not have evidence of any crime in order to support and sustain articles of impeachment in an overall bill of impeachment. And so the language of impeachment is bribery, treason, or treason, bribery, and other high crimes and misdemeanors. High crimes and misdemeanors was the subject of the Andrew Johnson impeachment. Nixon never got actually to impeachment. High crimes and misdemeanors, i.e. lying about a blowjob, was the subject of the Clinton impeachment. It is entirely possible that if it's drafted right, this will be the first time that anything other than high crimes and misdemeanors has been cited in an article of impeachment. Because instead of getting lost in extortion, as I've said before, and I guess it bears repeating, bribery. And when we talk about bribery, we have to talk about the common law meaning of bribery. And so, for instance, just before anybody can get to it, back when Justice Kennedy, you remember Justice Kennedy, the Republican Supreme Court justice whose son was Donald Trump's personal banker at Deutsche Bank, and that same Justice Kennedy suddenly bailed out last summer, or summer before last. Just up and quit the Supreme Court, making room for the nominee whose entire raison d'etre on the court is his belief that you just can't, that the president cannot just that the president of the United States simply cannot be bothered with such trivialities as obeying the law. Well, that Justice Kennedy wrote in Citizens United, and I'm paraphrasing, that just because somebody gives a politician money and the somebody giving the politician the money needs the politician to do something, and when they give the politician the money, the politician does what the person with the money needed done, Justice Kennedy held, well, that doesn't necessarily mean it was a bribe. I mean, you know. Well, that doesn't count here. At least it doesn't count if, say, fat dead Tony Scalia was still on the court, because him were a originalist. So we couldn't be looking at, like, for instance, Kennedy's definition. That self-same Justice Kennedy that Pete Buttigieg says we need so many more of. No, we have to look at what bribery means in 1787. And at that point in time, it was a strictly common law definition. Yes, yes, Flavio, that's my point. Extortion is a form of bribery. But we need to confine ourselves to that word. And bribery is a crime, a common law crime, whether one offers the bribe or whether one receives the bribe. And if the President of the United States says,
well, we've got some lovely military aid for Ukraine sitting right here. And if you will dig up some dirt on the Bidens for me, because every time someone says his name, I shit my pants. And if somebody says his name three times, I'm afraid he's going to appear right here next to me, and then you never get rid of him.
That's a bribe. I've got something of value for you if you do something of value to me. Also known as, we've got aid, but first we need a favor, though. This fucker is as guilty as sin. And the tissue paper thin fiction that Ukraine had somehow been involved in the 2016 skullduggery, well, that's straight out of the Kremlin. That's agitprop. That's information warfare. But the challenge here is to express this in terms simple enough that, although they won't change their mind, even a maggot could understand it. Writing to its supporters today, Impeachment AQ, or Impeachment HQ, which was formed by a group called Stand Up America and a group called Defend the Republic. Well, in that email, they said, Sondland's testimony confirms another quid pro quo that the meeting between Trump and Zelensky was conditioned on announcing investigations into the Bidens. They went on to say Kurt Volker's testimony debunks the claims that Donald Trump's demand for an investigation was focused on rooting out general corruption. It wasn't. It was focused on getting dirt to use against the Bidens. And so now, Gordon Sondland is hoping to remain unindicted when the shit hits the fan. Meanwhile, in the refreshed recollection testimony of Gordon Sondland, we have the following. I, Gordon Sondland, do hereby swear and affirm as follows, this time without my fingers crossed. I have reviewed the October 22, 2019 opening statement of Ambassador William Taylor. I've also reviewed the October 31, 2019 opening statement of Tim Morrison. These two opening statements have refreshed my recollection, caught me lying, about certain conversations in early September 2019. Ambassador Taylor recalls I told Mr. Morrison in early September 2019 that the resumption of U.S. aid to Ukraine had become tied to a public statement to be issued by Ukraine agreeing to investigate Burisma. Ambassador Taylor recalls that Mr. Morrison told Ambassador Taylor that I told Mr. Morrison that I had conveyed this message to Mr. Yermak on September 1, 2019, in connection with Vice President Pence's visit to Warsaw and a meeting with President Zelensky. Mr. Morrison recalls that I said to him in early September that resumption of U.S. aid to Ukraine might be conditioned on a public statement reopening the Burisma investigation. In my October 17, 2019 prepared testimony and in my deposition, I made clear that I had understood sometime after our May 23, 2019 White House debriefing that scheduling a White House visit for President Zelensky was conditioned upon President Zelensky's agreement to make a public anti-corruption statement. This condition had been communicated by Rudy Giuliani, with whom President Trump directed Ambassador Volker, Secretary Perry, and me on May 23, 2019, to discuss issues related to the president's concerns about Ukraine. Ambassador Volker, Secretary Perry, and I understood that satisfying Mr. Giuliani was a... Oh, dear God, if that won't bring up... make you satisfying Mr. Giuliani was a condition for scheduling the White House visit, which we all strongly believed to be in the mutualist interest of the United States and Ukraine. Sure you did. And so it goes on for about four pages. I now do recall a conversation on September 1st, 2019 in Warsaw with Mr. Yermak. Shh. Pretty sure Mike Pence was on that trip. This brief pull-aside conversation, rub-and-tug conversation, never mind. This brief pull-aside conversation followed the larger meeting involving Vice President Pence and President Zelensky, oops, in which President Zelensky had raised the issue of the suspension of U.S. aid to Ukraine directly with Vice President Pence. After that large meeting, I now recall speaking individually with Mr. Yermak, where I said that resumption of U.S. aid would likely not occur until Ukraine provided the public anti-corruption statement that we'd been discussing for many weeks. I also recall some questions as to whether the public statement could come from the newly appointed Ukrainian prosecutor general rather than from President Zelensky directly. Soon thereafter, I came to understand that, in fact, the public statement would need to come directly from President Zelensky. In other words, Sondland was trying to soften the blow a little bit and maybe suck a little of the poison out of the wound. But no, Nitwit Nero said, "No, I want that little fucker to read it himself." I don't remember exactly how I learned this, but I believe that the information may have come from either Mr. Giuliani or from Ambassador Volker, who may have discussed this with Mr. Giuliani. In a later conversation with Ambassador Taylor, I told him I'd been mistaken about whether a public statement could come from the prosecutor general. I'd come to understand that the public statement would have to come from President Zelensky himself. I woke up with a horse's head in my bed that morning. I can't remember if I had one or two phone calls with Nitwit Nero in the September 6th to 9th time frame. Despite repeated requests to the White House and the State Department, I haven't been granted access to all of the phone records. I'd like to review those phone records, along with any notes and other documents that may exist, to determine if I can provide more complete testimony to assist Congress. However, although I have no specific recollection of phone calls during this period with Ambassador Taylor or Mr. Morrison, I have no reason to question the substance of their recollection about my September 1st conversation with Mr. Yermak. I declare under penalty of perjury that the aforementioned is true. Executed on November 4th, 2019. And then there's like a dead spider squiggle and it says the Honorable Gordon D. Sondland. And herein we have the ancient and genteel concept of having one's recollection refreshed. Like a cool breeze. Like a cool breeze on a spring morning. Yes, that's it. Refreshed. Ah. Maybe a little lemonade. Sure. And, by the way, the notifications are screwed up in my email again, but I want to let Steve in New York know that his challenge was met. And thank you very kindly to Glenn, and thank you to Joseph, and thank you to Brian. So let's see, that's... That takes us down to 325, thanks to Brian and Joseph and Glenn and Steve in New York. And our buddy Ralphs put forward another challenge, another $10. And if we can get someone to respond to that one, well, that'll get us down to only 305 to go. And that would be huge. Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for jumping in on that. And I'm sorry I was so late announcing it, because I just assumed that I'm going to see it in my email, and then sometimes I don't. It just occurred to me, hey, dumbass, go check PayPal directly. So Ralphs has a challenge on the table. Thank you, Ralphs. And hopefully that'll get us, if somebody responds to that, that'll get us down to 305. And then, well, golly, if we could, over the next hour and 14 minutes or so, knock down another 105, we'd have yesterday taken care of, which would be awesome. Thank you. Thank you so much for all your efforts in keeping this little effort, going. It means more than I can express, but you've probably got a pretty good idea how much. Thank you. I have a feeling that there are going to be more moments like this going forward when people... And I don't know why it's so hard for them to understand that Donald Trump will not defend them, that he will throw them under the bus, as the saying goes, that he will use them as human shield, as bullet sponges in front of himself. That's what cowards do. And there is no evidence to suggest that Donald Trump is or ever has been anything but a coward. It goes on and on and on. And by the way, I mentioned earlier, really icky images. Don't go looking for anything with the search term like Trump hugs Kirk Suzuki. Just don't. He's the catcher for the Washington Nationals. He put on a maggot hat when the Nationals went to visit the White House. Several Nationals stayed away. Good for them. And Trump hugged him from behind. If you value the ability to keep supper down, say in the Central Standard Time Zone or the Mountain Standard Time Zone and possibly even the Pacific Standard Time Zone, don't go looking. Just no. Don't do it. Ew. Let's run over and check in with the phones and see what Scott's got going on. Hey, Scott.
Well, with your kind permission, Bob, I would like to help you, assist you.
Yes.
With the understanding of why Trump supporters of long standing never catch on to what will ultimately happen when he will abandon them, when they're no longer useful.
Greed?
May I do that?
Well, yeah.
No. It goes back to the late 1950s. And I believe, this is how old I am, I actually believe them in first run showings on TV, syndicated TV. But certainly you grew up at some point in your Wonder Bread years.
Well, we're still hoping I will, yes.
Watching the live-action Adventures of Superman, starring George Reeves and...
Only in rerun, because it was in black and white.
Oh, yeah. John Hamilton as Perry White, a couple of different women as Lois Lane. And who played Jimmy Olsen? Jack Larson? Was that who it was?
You're way beyond me now.
Okay. Well, in every scene where the hoods, that is to say the criminals...
The bad guys,
were finally face-to-face with Superman, invariably they would pull out their guns and shoot until all six bullets in their revolvers had been expended. Meanwhile, on the other side of the room, George Reeves, as the Man of Steel, Superman, would be standing against a wall, usually, and the bullets would be hitting him, and he would have this look on his face of, please get this the fuck over with. Don't you people know that the bullets will not harm me because I am from
the Man of Steel, yes.
Yes, I'm from the planet Krypton, which has a red sun, and I came to this planet when mine was being destroyed by abuse by thinkers and doers. And my parents sent me to Earth, and I was found by Mr. and Mrs. Kent out in Ohio somewhere and raised as their own from a baby. Okay, so that's the same fucking routine in every episode where that happens.
Sure.
Then the criminals will take their guns that have been devoid of bullets and throw them as hard as they can at Superman's chest, and he grabs them and then squeezes them into an indistinguishable hunk of metal.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
Well, that's the dynamic going on. In other words, the Trump supporters, who have much to lose by standing by this clown, okay, to the bitter end, they have much to lose. But they don't catch on that it's like the criminals shooting their guns, expending their bullets, throwing the weapons, and they still get into the Superman headlock at the end of the episode.
For people of younger generations, not that much younger, mind you, but somewhat younger, is there a comparison to be made with the idiots who always insisted on attacking Bruce Lee one at a time instead of all at once?
Well, now, see, that's a whole different story. I never did watch, you're thinking of the Green Hornet.
Any Bruce Lee movie. Because
wasn't Bruce
there'll be like 15 guys and they're like, oh, we will get you now. And then they attack him one at a time. Whereas if they all go at him at once, they got a much better chance. You know, it's just mathematics.
I have to dispute that. I don't know if they have a much better chance, but the pattern formed by their bodies flying through the air will make a more intricate visual. If they all attack him one at a time and he fends them off. But I don't think I've knowingly watched a Bruce Lee movie, but I seem to remember that Bruce Lee played the Asian helpmate of the Green Hornet on the ABC 1960s TV series. I could be wrong, but it rings a very faint bell in my head. Somebody certainly will know. But that's not why I called.
No, of course it isn't. It never is.
Why is it that I do call, Bob? I'm sure a lot of the Horn family members by now.
I think it's the sparkling conversation, Scott.
Well, when does that start exactly?
That's kind of up to you. There. I'm sort of unsparkly right now. My sparklers are dimmed. It's been a hell of a month.
I'm working at a deficit at this point. And it's so early in the month, and I'm not real happy about this. The highlight of the day, this gives you a rough idea of how bleak things are. The highlight of the day, today was a three-squirrel day here at Shea Guru. Little furry, fluffy-tailed bastards showing up in threes now for their daily ration of nuts. But that was nice. And they've gotten to the point where I hold it out, and they will put their little paws up on my hand and gently take the nut being offered and then scamper away to chomp on it or bury it. But so that's what was the highlight. I am sick as a dog. I feel slightly better today, but I'm coming down with something. I don't know what the fuck it is. So that's part of it. The other part of it is I'm just in a blah sort of frame of mind about things. And this is unusual for me. Normally I'm upbeat and positive and effervescent and all that stuff, but I want to tell the entire universe, go fuck yourself today, you know? I which is unusual for me. Maybe this is not the day for me to call. But I've got a question that maybe you or the Horn family can help with. Today was supposedly the start of the long-awaited trial of one Roger Stone.
Yes.
Long-time Indian companion to the masked man, Trump. Okay? Chemo savvy, as it were. And apparently, from the report I read, he was taken ill during the jury selection.
Oh, I'm sure he was.
Of the trial. No, I sent you the link.
I know. Yes.
Okay. And I'm thinking, well, now who didn't see that coming? But last night, in anticipation for today's trial proceedings getting underway, I rewatched Get Me Roger Stone. Now, Paul Manafort, who was a bigwig in the Trump organization during the election process, and then fell out of favor, they said. Back in the 80s, Manafort and Stone were in business together as lobbyists, and they would represent in Washington the interests of some of the most vile, corrupt, nasty characters on the planet.
Yeah, dictators are us.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But they also, at some point, were hooked up in Ukraine with the former head, or one of the honchos in Ukraine, who apparently was palsy-walsy with the Vladdy-Daddy Putin. Now, my question, here's the
also
the
true. So was one of the consultants for Bernie.
Oh, well, I didn't know that. But my question becomes this. Has Paul Manafort flipped? Because, see, he went through the gamut of legalities.
No, he's still cool in his heels.
So he's not going to cooperate.
I don't know if he's on the witness list or not. I wish I don't have that information.
Well, no. I mean, just in the sense of the investigations of various sorts regarding Trump. But now with this trial, you would think that if anybody had the goods on Roger Stone, Manafort would be the one to have them. But if he's staying mum, then, you know, that's not going to be happening probably. Who was it that flipped? I thought there were one or two that were just couldn't cooperate enough with the various investigations. Wasn't Flynn one of them?
And well, Flynn said yes, and then Flynn said no.
Oh, I can't keep track of it. That's my problem.
And this is a lawyering thing, because it's become abundantly clear that lawyers getting through to Nitwit Nero is a challenge at best. But one of the things that did apparently get through was it is possible that the pardon power itself can be an impeachable offense, because the framers actually said that in the Federalist Papers.
That has to do with knowing from the get-go that the thing that the person is convicted of, it is a not good thing, and you're furthering those efforts.
Yeah,
in
corrupt,
a sense.
Corrupt purpose.
Yeah. Okay. Well, see, you knew the term because you got lawyering background. I, on the other hand, don't know shit from Shinola, as it were, which explains that nasty smell coming off the shoe tree. But anyway, well, I'm disappointed. I had fervently hoped that Paul Manafort had been one who flipped.
So far, I don't think so.
God, I am so hoping for better outcomes in the
And I have created some. I've created some misunderstanding. I was not denying that Bruce Lee played Kato. I was just talking about his Bruce Lee movies.
Yeah.
And generally speaking, 70s kung fu fighting movies in general, in which people rush one at a time, the hero martial arts, the hero.
I think I, now that I think about it, wasn't he in Enter the Dragon?
Yes.
I think I did see that.
And by the way, Ron and Raleigh reminds us, Lois Lane was played by Phyllis Coates, and Noel Neil Jack Larson was Jimmy Olsen.
Yeah.
And only the first two seasons were black and white seasons. 3 through 6 were filmed in color. I remember it in reruns, but I also, look, I'm going to betray myself as probably not sufficiently American or something. I was never a Superman guy.
No, come on.
Sorry. Mm-mm.
Well, what was the deal?
I'm a Batman guy. Batman had cool shit. Superman just had an unfair advantage.
Are you telling me that faster than a speeding... They tell you at the open of the show, faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive.
Yeah, but he's just a pissant back on Krypton. Everybody's like that.
Well, I'm astounded. I would have sworn that you were a Superman fan. You know how much of a Superman fan I was? When I was like 6 or 7 years old, one Halloween season, Aunt Emma took me down to G.C. Murphy, the Five and Dime, down in Old Town Alexandria, there on King Street, and bought me a Superman costume. And I thought that putting that outfit on and putting that cape on would imbue me with the powers of Superman. So starting in the kitchen, you got to remember the layout of my house. If you started by the kitchen table, ran the length of the kitchen, through the doorway into the dining room, through the dining room into the living room, hang a sharp left and out the front door, across the porch, and through the opening where the screen door is, I would get enough of a running start where I could go up and away and off into the blue sky. Well, what happened was someone had locked the porch screen door. And so I started at the dining room, at the kitchen table, ran the length of the kitchen, out through the dining room, into the living room, hung a hard left, out the front door, which was already open, across the porch, smack dab into the locked screen door. And there went my superpowers. Apparently, the screen door was no match, or I was no match for the screen door. So that I got an early awakening and an early lesson in disappointment. Not to believe everything you see on the television.
Well, and see, that's the difference. See, this is professional broadcasting. That is the difference. You were the right age when the Superman show was on.
Mm-hmm.
I was the right age in living color when Batman was on. Thus,
you mean the ABC series Batman?
Yeah.
Oh, see, I thought you were into the comic books. The TV series Batman was kind of a camp exercise.
And I loved it.
Really?
Yeah, Adam West, Burt Ward. Good God! Eartha Kitt, Julie Newmar, Cesar Romero, Burgess Meredith,
Frank Gorshin.
Frank Gorshin, the Riddler.
As the Riddler.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The gizmos. Because I said it the other night. You know, I'm a gear slut. I am. And it goes way back. And you talk about the, and I've told this story before, but you talk about the, you know, you finding the limits of your superpowers. I never got the chance. Because when I was a little 5, 6, 7 year old kid, there was a toy store that was in within walking distance, and since we only had one car, my mother and I would walk to the grocery store in the up the shopping center in the mornings, and then we'd window shop.
Yeah.
And the toy store there had, oh my God, a Batman utility belt.
I remember those.
And like a dummy. No, not like one. I was one. I was just an innocent child talking to his beloved mother. And I said, Mother, I've got to have one of those because the minute I get one, I'm gonna use the Batarang and crawl down and crawl down the wall off the roof with it. At which point it was confirmed that I would never own a Batman utility belt.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because we had already been through the thing of me being taken to see Mary Poppins and being caught dashing out the door with an umbrella and headed for the stepladder to try to get up and see if I could, with the, you know, and float down with the umbrella like Mary Poppins.
Ah, the old Mary Poppins umbrella trick never works.
So that's... I ruined it, and lo and behold, though, because life is beautiful. A lot of years later, I had told that story to my beloved wife, and so one Christmas we were opening packages, and my son and I both got Batman utility belts. And by this time, I had learned that it just was not going to work for me, and using the Batarang to rappel down off the house.
Well, see, I guess that would make a difference, me having grown up in the 60s and you a little bit later, 10 years or so later. I hadn't considered that. I was also a spy nerd. There was a in the toy stores, and this was a big item, high dollar item, maybe $9.99 or $12.99. It was either the James Bond or the Man from U.N.C.L.E. attaché case that had a knife hidden in the handle or something, and you had to open it a certain way, otherwise there would be a little explosion thing. There was a cap mechanism, you know, like a toy gun, those rolls of caps.
Yes, you know? Yes, yes.
But it had a mechanism that if you weren't a trained spy and didn't know how to open it correctly, it would explode using roll caps, okay? And I can't remember what all they had. They had a fake cigarette box that was really, if you, upon closer inspection, was really a secret radio. And there was a Luger-type pistol that had attachments that you can make it into a rifle with a sniper scope. This was big shit. But I was a spy geek, too, back then. I come by my geekiness quite honestly. Thank you very much.
And you've hung on to it over the years tenaciously, I must say.
No, not the items, but the geekiness, of course.
That's what I meant.
I wish I still had some of those toys. Those toys are very, they appreciated very nicely, some of them. Of that era.
And note coming to you from Lady B, say it with a smile. Scott, it's the sparkling conversation and your witty repartee with Bob. P.S. I'm feeling a bit on the edge myself, pent up frustration at the slow pace to get this clown to atone for his crimes. Let's hope it doesn't go completely to shit before something that will give us hope again happens. Precisely.
Amen. Amen.
And of course, lots of corrections coming in. No one was like that on regarding Superman. No one was like that on Krypton, for one thing. Krypton no longer existed. The other thing is that Krypton had a red sun, and Kal-El got his powers from our yellow sun.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think had Krypton existed, he'd just be some boring little nerd getting his ass kicked on the playground.
Wasn't...
No yellow sun or any of that stuff.
Wasn't the backstory of Krypton... The planet was going to destroy, was going to be destroyed, but wasn't it due to the irresponsible actions of the leaders of the planet? It seems to me, at least in the comic books, that was the backstory. Now, we're going back 50 years, so I'm trusting old memory cells. I'm sure somebody would know. Because, and I forget their Kryptonian name, but Superman's parents...
Jor-El.
Wrapped Jor-El, thank you. Didn't Marlon Brando
I didn't.
Play
I only knew that because Marlon Brando played him.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. But
talk about so waiting for the check to clear.
They wrapped him in a blanket, put him in a rocket, and sent him off to spare him from the ultimate, the imminent.
Yeah, what a lousy thing to do to a kid. Make him the only exemplar of his species remaining in the universe.
And only to land on Earth in the American Midwest in the 1930s.
I read James Fenimore Cooper at an early age because I was one of the student librarians in junior high school. And I read The Last of the Mohicans, and I thought it was just tragic. And then I found out that James Fenimore Cooper was drawing on something that happened here, which is the story of Chief Logan. And if you've ever read, it's a speech called Logan's Lament. People like Jefferson just bawled over it and said that it stood with the greatest oratory of Cicero and et cetera, et cetera.
This is Last of the Mohicans?
What it was based on, Logan's Lament. The last member of a clan or a tribe or a family group. Who is there who will weep for Logan? No one. It's the sound effects that really make our conversation, Scott. how sad. You wake up every morning going, I'm never going to find Mrs. Superman. And of course, along comes Superwoman and Supergirl, and I guess were those separate yeah. rocket ships?
There was a super dog, as I recall.
Oh, of course.
Well, you know, in fairness, Superman did date sporadically.
Can you call what Clark Kent and Lois Lane had going on dating?
Well, no, this was beyond that. He got down and dirty with Earth women until one of them used a kryptonite IUD. And
Jesus, Scott! It burns.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Where is my power? Oh, honey, it happens sometimes. And meanwhile, from Robert in Australia, this little bit of trivia, which is delightful. Superman and Kato. Superman with George Reeves, Series 1, made in black and white and hardcore. Series 2 to 6, or I guess maybe seasons 2 to 6, maybe that's a language barrier thing between here and up over down under. Made in color, they started to get campy. The makers knew it was a hit and would last, so opted for the incredibly expensive, at the time, color film, even though TV in the U.S. was nearly all black and white. Meanwhile, the Green Hornet in Asia was called The Kato Show and starred Bruce Lee with some white guy.
Britt Reed, was that the actor's name or the character?
Ron had that a minute ago. Let me see.
I'm amazed I remember half of this stuff or misremember it. We'll find out in a minute.
Oh, I had it there a minute ago. Now it's gone. Ron says, I forgot one Catwoman. Who was it? I thought I mentioned Eartha Kitt. I thought Julie Newmar was the other Catwoman, but maybe she was Batgirl. No, she wasn't Batgirl, was she? Oh, shit. We got the internet here. Why do we talk about this? But Horn, ad hoc research department, you know, get with. I've driven a rift between Brother Deacon Asa and me. Not a Superman fan? Okay, then. That's it, Bob. I don't think I'll be tuning in from now on.
Did you know that my hometown was mentioned on the ABC program, Batman? At one point, this was in an episode that featured Victor Bono as King Tut.
Yes, Victor Bono.
And somebody referenced Alexandria, meaning Egypt, but Commissioner Gordon said, oh, do you mean that delightful suburban town just outside of our nation's capital, Washington, D.C.? And we were all just as proud as we could be that Alexander.
Oh, well, yeah, you're on the, you have arrived. Turn out the lights and go price the blue Buicks.
God. Oh, God.
Okay, here's the backstory. Jesus, how do we get here? How do we get here?
I don't know.
Krypton dies, Ron and Raleigh. Krypton was going to explode. Jor-El tried to warn the powers that be, but his warnings were ignored. So he and Lara sent baby Kal-El to Earth. Supergirl came from Kandor, which was a shrunken city stolen by Brainiac.
Oh, Jesus. See, now that's the deep dive. I don't remember any of that.
Brainiac.
A young Clark Kent was Superboy.
Yes.
Before he
was, yeah, that's okay. Just the backstory.
Well, how did Superdog?
That's kind of like the backstory of Jesus reanimating the clay pigeons, because these are all Christ metaphors.
Jesus was a skeet shooter?
Gracie!
I'm sorry.
If I had a cigar and you were a platinum blonde and beautiful and a girl.
It's not me, it's the cough medicine talking, probably.
I thought you were a little perky this evening.
God, you people have created a monster with this.
Lee Merriweather, yes, the other Catwoman was God, Lee yes. Merriweather. God, yes, 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 yes. Thank you, Ron.
Her? Wasn't she Buddy Epson's secretary
on Barnacle Groans, yes.
Yes. Oh, and there was a right-wing reactionary bastard in real life, that Buddy Epson. And I forget which other cast member. He used to have horrific arguments.
Well, you know, this is good. It's funny. I think we're hungry for just a little idle chit-chat sometimes, Scott, because we are, you know, I just finished 45 minutes on... refreshing the recollection and the code duello. And so I get this note from John in North Dakota. Batman update. Lee Merriweather was Catwoman, as well as Eartha Kitt and Julie Newmar. Yvonne Craig was Batgirl.
Yeah.
Love the conversation.
Well, and I tried to start off with something serious, but how do we get on these things? I guess it's my mind. And
you're
your
the
mind.
One that started with the Superman George Reeves shit, and didn't he come to some god awful end? Didn't he shoot himself
or
something?
Yes, he killed himself. Apparently, there are some people. There's a true Hollywood story, or one of those types of one.
Horribly depressed and ruined by fame, and couldn't get away from yeah.
But there is speculation, and I think there was even a book. Written about the murder, that there was a woman involved and she actually killed him, that he didn't actually kill himself. There was some sort of love triangle, or someone was leaving somebody else and the woman took umbrage and actually killed him. But you know, he was George Reeves was screwed as a result of Superman. Did you know that George Reeves played one of the Tarleton twins in Gone with the Wind?
No.
Did you know that?
No.
Yes. In the early part
it's
of the picture.
It's Twoo, it's Twoo. Van Williams played Britt Reed, Green Hornet. Thank you, D'Angelo.
Okay.
And Eileen with this note, Burt Ward now lives in Arkansas and does rescue work and manufactures dog food called Gentle Giants. My Blaze loves it. Blaze is my dog. How about that?
Wow.
I'll have to look for it. Tilly might like that. And our friend at O-Pipe Down on Twitter says, all caps, Batman forever. And meanwhile, this, I hope it's true, from Trey in Kentucky Stan. Holy shit, Matt Bevin's about to lose in Kentucky Stan.
Oh, good. Good, good, good.
That's the happiest news I've had all night.
Well, now see, I think they were saying that the Republicans, and here's the ironic thing, the symbol of the Republican Party is the elephant, supposedly a creature with excellent memory. Apparently, they don't remember the midterms, and apparently they've got blinders on in regard to what happens when you stick too closely to the Donald.
Well, you know, that is what elephants are said to be known for. But I don't know how you really test elephant memory. But you can empirically gather pretty easy data that of all the land-based mammals, elephants are more full of shit than any other creature moving on four legs.
You mean literally full of shit?
Yes. You ever? Oh. I mean, what was it? 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago, the story of the poor zoo worker who was killed when he was in the wrong place at the wrong time, or maybe trying to clean out a plugged up elephant
Oh mercy!
Yeah, it's Bob.
By the way.
Yes.
That's not elephant shit. Those are GOP talking points coming out of
Well,
there.
That's absolutely true. And here, I'll give you a tiny little jingle for that.
Elephant tinkle.
It's the polar opposite of what W.C. Fields was talking about when he told the story about my uncle, the brewer, fell into a vat of beer. 15 men tried to save him, but he valiantly fought them off. At his funeral, in his eulogy, they said, "Ah, death, where is thy sting? Ah, grave, where is thy victory?" And by the way, for, you know, little 5, 6-year-old me, Batgirl, Yvonne Craig. Sorry.
Well, you know, I was that way about Barbara Eden.
Ah, okay. Here comes the rest of the backstory. Supergirl, Brainiac took the shrunken city of Kandor before the planet exploded. Kara-El, Kal-El's cousin, escaped from Kandor and came to Earth to find her cousin. In the Crisis on Earth crossover on the CW this year, Burt Ward will make a cameo appearance. Well, cool.
Oh, wow.
So are we saying that the L family of Krypton were hillbillies? I mean, she comes to Earth to find her cousin. You're my cousin, you're my cousin, you're my cousin.
Well, wait a minute. Before
closer
I forget,
kin.
I got to
see, we can
George.
We can tell those jokes on ourselves here. It's just that when the shithead National Mining Association lobby firms tell them on us that we take offense.
I've got to get back to George Reeves. When he was starting out, he was a serious actor. And, of course, now his main claim to fame was the brief appearance in Gone with the Wind in 1939. But he did other films, okay? But the thing was, after 3 or 4 years of Superman, he was screwed. He was like, name any other popular actor who has gotten typecast. And that's how screwed he was. So apparently he had not only the romantic issues going on, but he professionally, he had no future to speak of. He even did a cameo on I Love Lucy, for crying out loud, dressed as Superman. He couldn't get away from the role.
Yeah, same thing happened to Clayton Moore.
The Lone Ranger.
And of course, eventually, they whoever owned the rights to the old Lone Ranger screwed him over and told him he couldn't call himself the Lone Ranger anymore. He was like 112 at that point and doing, doing little show ups at used car lots and things. It was all he had because doing the Lone Ranger had destroyed his career, and so he had to bill himself as the Masked Man.
Yeah.
But I got a story. I got a story
well, wait
here.
A minute,
I got,
wait a minute,
hold
minute.
On. I got a story.
Okay, go ahead.
And go by ahead. By the way, we're still trying to knock it down to 305. If somebody will knock, we'll kick in $10 to match Ralph's $10 challenge. We'll get it down to 305 for the evening. Thank you so much, everybody. it would be nice to knock out at least half of yesterday. So, no, this is from the corporate dickhead files. I mentioned, you know, they did that to Clayton Moore, right? Because, you know, they have to protect their brand. And he was trying to, you know, he was out there telling children to be decent to each other, whatever. So, we have to go to Minnesota. The land of Minnesota Nice, for this, as a matter of fact. An enterprising student at the University of Minneapolis is the subject. And we have to understand that in Minnesota, and what a heartbreak. I think a while back we were talking about Krispy Kreme, and it was back when Ron was telling us about the Krispy Kreme 10K race where you... not pretty. So there have not been Krispy Kreme donuts in Minnesota for 11 years. I think back to our dear friend Laurel, who did not, although his name ended in L, did not come from Krypton.
Yeah.
He probably could have opined bitterly over this. But 11 years ago, Krispy Kreme exited Minnesota. I guess they just couldn't compete or whatever. But they left behind a legion of fans. Enter 21-year-old Jason Gonzalez from Champlin, Minnesota. Well, he knew people on Facebook, and they started talking about, I sure do miss them Krispy Kremes. And I can understand that. So he got it in his head that what he would do is he would do the Krispy Kreme equivalent of Smokey and the Bandit, only with no cops.
Taking the beer.
So he would drive 270 miles to a Krispy Kreme bakery in Clive, Iowa.
Holy fuck.
And he would buy like 100 dozen Krispy Kremes at a time. And load them into his car and drive them back to Minnesota. And people were paying him like $20 a box for them. And, you know, they go for like $9.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a reasonable markup just to cover gas and wear and tear on your vehicle and stuff. And he was taking, and he was taking the extra money he made and applying it to his breathtakingly terrifying student debt. So 1,200 dozen, and people were paying him, $20 a box. Some people were some people developed a real bad Krispy Kreme habit, and were laying down $100 a trip.
Holy fuck!
He paid full retail at the store in Iowa. I'm sorry, not Minneapolis, but Metropolitan State University in St. Paul. And he was paying off his student debt with it. And he wasn't doing anything wrong, dirty, or illegal. He was engaging in the entrepreneurial spirit of the free market that seems most people seem to think is a core principle of the new 90 states of America, right up there with Jeebus. Well, he got profiled by the St. Paul Pioneer Press. That periodical probably being a scourge among news announcers in the greater Minneapolis-St. Paul area because of the pee-popping involved.
Yeah.
St. Paul Pioneer Press. So a week after the story runs, the regional office of Krispy Kreme all the way down in Nebraska calls him and then sends him a cease and desist.
Oh, man.
This past Saturday would have been his 20th run.
let me guess, he was, they said he was probably infringing on the franchisee's deal. But if all the Krispy Kreme locations were gone where he was, or what did they say he was doing?
Well, I guess he was damaging their brand. Maybe they
providing
were
it to people
maybe,
who
maybe,
paid
maybe,
for it.
Maybe they were worried that they were stale by the time he got them home.
No, that's just
but
crazy.
this is horrible. This is horrible PR for Krispy Kreme. And by last night, corporate had issued a statement from down in North Carolina, the home office, and said, we're looking into the matter. That's what we're doing, looking into the matter.
Well, let me tell you something about Krispy
if
Kreme.
If I was Krispy Kreme, I'd hire the little guy.
Well,
I mean,
not only that.
Guy. I'd hire him.
But it's like, you remember what Bud Light did, when that ball hit that... guy at the ball with the World Series game a couple of weeks ago. He's carrying the Bud Lights, hits him in the chest on national TV, and they put him in a fucking commercial.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and see, they're trying, Krispy Kreme's trying to do damage control now, Scott, because they said that we appreciate Jason's passion for Krispy Kreme and his entrepreneurial spirit as he pursues his edumacation. Now, y'all have already fucked up. Because, frankly, once you buy your Krispy Kremes, you can, without getting overly graphic, do with them what you want.
Well,
okay, let's go ahead and get overly graphic, because here in Appalachia, we've got a saying, when we want somebody to mind their own business or leave us alone or go away, we say, why don't you go take a flying fuck at a rolling donut?
Well, I wouldn't do that to a Krispy Kreme. But, yeah, I get what you're saying.
But wait a minute,
doesn't the
And the home
Krispy
office
Kreme...
in North Carolina has got to be, I mean, you can almost imagine the God damn it, get me Omaha on the line. What in the hell were you thinking? We had to get it. We got out of Minnesota 11 years ago because we couldn't sell the fucking things. We finally built a little bit. Some other guy takes it on himself to give us a little free press. And the next thing you know, you're telling him to quit. You're fired.
Well, they have a program. On the corporate level, Krispy Kreme has a program where if your club, church, or organization wants a fundraising opportunity,
they will let you hustle their donuts.
Yes, at your next event or whatever. And they give you a break on the pricing and everything.
Right, and see, he didn't even get that. He wasn't trying to get anything special out of it. I mean, I don't know what a gallon of gas is going for in St. Paul these days, but 270 miles in a vehicle that's big enough to hold 100 boxes?
God damn, Chirps, calm
Jesus,
down.
Jesus, Chirps, what are you doing to the cats, Scott?
I'm trying to feed her. She doesn't get the concept of anticipation is part of
no,
the...
No, 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 I hear
journey.
Her. She speaks English. Yeah. Now!
Well, Christ, am I grow another arm and dish it out more quickly? This cat has no memory. She is not an elephant in a previous existence. But anyway... Yeah, I hope I never learned that Krispy Kreme is a big GOP supporter.
Oh, I'm sure they are.
That will break my heart.
I mean, it's not like they're organic, free-range, vegan, GMO-free donuts. I mean, these are the epitome of, you know, horrifying, artery-hardening nightmares. It just happens to be that they're fucking the most delicious donuts ever made.
If that's ever disclosed, I don't want to know who they support politically, because
with very few exceptions, like Penzi Spices or the folks that advertise with Malloy, the River Moon Coffee, you know, there's very few, you know, Ben and Jerry's ice cream. There's very little in the way of progressive liberal corporations.
Well, I try not to patronize companies who spend their money on politics that don't work for me. But by God, I mean, see, I have this theory that in the Old Testament days, when the wandering Jews woke up in the morning and the ground was covered with manna, manna was either Krispy Kremes or fucking White Castles. That I've always said that there was some thing going on along those lines. Now, I know the White Castle cheeseburgers are not kosher, strictly speaking, but God damn it, you know, if I can't think of two better things the good Lord could provide on the ground gratis than White Castles and Krispy Kremes. Come on.
Well, see, I'm a Southerner, so I'll sub in crystals for your White Castles. But apart from that, but you got to be careful now, because it used to be when we would go to Alabama, what you do is you go west out of West Virginia on I-64 toward Lexington, Kentucky, and at I think Olive Hill, Kentucky, was the northernmost crystal, but it was in a Shell station. And the last two times I stopped there, because you know you get a second chance with Bob Kincaid. Oh Jesus, I'm talking about myself in the third person. Fuck me dead.
You
get a second chance, but it's been twice now that I've stopped at that northernmost crystal and had just a bad experience. But if you go to a standalone crystal, you're still, the little tiny chopped onions grilled and the pickle and the mustard. And if you're extravagant, you go for the cheeseburger. That's all that's on it. The bun is steamed. You can read through the hamburger and they're just delicious. And you can rip through six of them without even trying.
Where are they based? Because Crystal rings a bell. And I must have lived
somewhere. I want to say that Crystal started in Nashville, because White Castle was a Midwestern firm.
Yeah, well, they were Ohio, as I recall.
And Crystal's, I think, are out of Nashville. And Crystal's and Krispy Kremes. And by the way, just a tip for folks out there who, like me, are nowhere near the Hot Now sign. Because it was going to be a very stressful day, yesterday I picked up a box of Krispy Kreme chocolate glazed. Nothing, no cream filling or blech, no. But I did get I also got a box of Krispy Kreme lemon filled.
Ooh, those are good.
On a paper napkin, one Krispy Kreme lemon filled in the microwave. And it's kind of like popcorn, because you got to hear that pop. You put it in there and you turn it on until you hear the first little grease pop go. And you ding, yeah. Turn it off, pull it out. And it's as warm and wonderful as the moment that it rolled off the line in the bakery with the Hot Now sign on.
God, now I want Krispy Kremes.
And White Castles. And so too the same with the chocolate glazed, only it's like 4 seconds tops or you start losing that wonderful chocolate ganache, which is unlike any other. Yeah.
When you say chocolate glazed, do you mean the cake with the
No. This is the classic Krispy Kreme with chocolate icing on it.
Oh, see, I'm not a big chocolate fan, but I do like the cake ones with the topping of milk chocolate or whatever that is. God, now
well, that's
I
what this
go.
Is. It's just a regular glazed Krispy Kreme with a topping of that magnificent chocolate ganache that they do.
Would they have had Crystal hamburger joints in Texas, like South Texas, like Corpus Christi? Or Oklahoma, even?
Because
I know them from somewhere.
I mean, you get into Texas and you're in Whataburger territory, and that's just that's an entirely different kettle of fish. Because Whataburgers are wonderful, and they extend as far over as the Mississippi and Alabama Gulf Coast.
We've got those In-N-Out, and I never thought much of them.
Yeah, they're a little. I've never had one, but I know Bourdain was a big In-N-Out fan, and he doctored his somehow. But they're a little Jesus-y for me. I mean, it's like the chain. Backyard grill or the backyard or whatever it is You know, they grill all their burgers and everything. And you get a free Bible verse on everything.
Yeah, I don't want that.
You know, I just don't want to I don't want to unwrap my burger and see, and their eyes shall rot in their heads and their tongues shall shrivel in their mouths. No.
The only thing biblical at fast food that I want is to magically say something or do something, and it's a loaves and fishes deal where I can feed the whole crew for $1.99 or something. But as far as proselytizing, I have no interest whatsoever.
Oh, and for anybody that's in the greater Birmingham area or ever passes through the greater Birmingham area, these guys refuse. It's weird because pretty much all over the East Coast now, or at least the Southeast, you can buy a jug of Milo's, M-I-L-O apostrophe S, sweet tea. And it's the best jug of pre-made sweet tea going. Real sugar, no high fructose corn syrup. Got a real pronounced tea bot nature to it. You know, the bitterness, the wonderfulness of this tea. Ice cold, poured over ice. It's wonderful. But their tea comes from a chain of burger joints in and around the greater Birmingham area, also called Milo's. And a Milo's burger is unlike anything anywhere because you can have cheese on it, but it's got onions and pickles and brown gravy.
Brown gravy. I like that on shoestring fries.
It's wonderful. Absolutely magnificent.
I don't do this very often. May I do a tiny bit of food porn since we are on?
Oh, well, yeah, I thought that's food. What we were doing.
Well, see, I happened to post about this because I tried it just out of the blue the other night, and I was so impressed with it, I posted about it on my Facebook, but now that I'm on with you, I figure I will share it with the rest of the group that way. The other night, every now and again, I have a hankering for smoked sausage. And I usually get beef or turkey, either Hillshire Farms or the Kroger store brand. And I notice this smoked sausage called Private Selection.
Yeah, Kroger, Smith's, Ralph's, Private Selection, always good stuff.
Butcher shop quality, classic, naturally hardwood smoked and cooked.
I've had
pre-cooked.
That.
Pork and beef, coarse grind. And it turns out I had an 80 cents off coupon, which is what tipped the deal. And I cooked some of this up the other night, Bob, and sliced it up real good and sprinkled it with a good helping of Arthur Bryant's original barbecue sauce. And I'm telling you, I will never buy a Hillshire or Kroger ordinary brand smoked sausage again. They won me over with this brand.
Then buy a bunch of it because it won't last. That private selection stuff is really good, but it doesn't stick. I think they're just like limited contracts. Their buyers find good stuff, get it labeled that way, and then they can't get it anymore sometimes, and too bad.
Oh, wow.
Because that happened with the private selection Hatch New Mexico green chili salsa. Me and the radiology tech from Somersville Hospital were unknowingly in a constant competition, and each of us was going in and just clearing the shelves every time it was there, because every time the rest of the time there wasn't any, and it was either him or me. Found that out by accident, and then they just quit getting it because they couldn't get it anymore.
Well, that's too bad. I will enjoy this then while I can. I found the taste and the texture and the mouthfeel, everything, all of it, just far superior to any other.
Yeah, but see, you only love that like you love that because you've never had Kaneka.
Now, what is Kaneka? I hear you mention it.
Oh, it's the most fabulous sausage ever made. Comes out of South Alabama. There's a factory down there. It smells like hickory smoke for like a 30-mile radius. You can order it online. They'll ship it to you. It's vacuum sealed. And it's a coarse ground pork sausage in a natural lamb casing that naturally hickory smoked, and there is no flavor like it on earth.
Well, I must check that out then,
it's intensely frustrating for me because I have to drive 2 hours to get to the nearest food city over in Virginia that has it, because nobody in West Virginia seems to know. You know, Walmart, the distribution gods, have no idea how to get it into West Virginia, even though it's in Kentucky, Virginia, Tennessee, Ohio. That pisses me off. And by the way, Jim says Chirps has Patch's attention for certain. She's crawling all over Jim's tablet trying to get at the cat in the box.
Well, the thing is, we go through this every damn night. She gets a little canned food in the evening. I usually take a dollop out of two different flavors, mix it up real well, and it's as if I have never fed her before, and I have somehow forgotten.
Oh, you've got the cat equivalent of 30 First Dates. A movie I'll bet you've never seen.
Okay, well, all right.
It's about a woman with amnesia and the guy who loves her, and he keeps trying to get her to fall in love with him, but every time he takes her out, it's the first date all over again.
Oh, okay.
And we've got a little bit of a denouement, and of course, I mean, this makes perfect sense, a little bit of a denouement on the Krispy Kreme story. James in Illinois tells us it was supposedly about liability. Well, I'm sure it was, and that means that there's some asshole lawyer in Omaha who's like, oh, we can't have this. I mean, this is intolerable from a risk management standpoint. I mean, they might think that we're selling stale donuts, or we might get sued if somebody finds a bug in one. I mean, we have no control over the distribution processes, and I didn't get a harumph out of that guy.
But aren't donuts along the lines, in the minds of Republicans, aren't they along the lines of guns?
You mean when donuts are outlawed, only outlaws will have donuts? What?
No. I mean, once the manufacturer is devoid of any legal consequences, once the sale has been consummated,
because there is a congressional the Congress conferred immunity on the gun manufacturers, specific to gun manufacturers and outside the normal laws of product liability.
Yeah, do you think they were trying to pull a fast one with that? Or?
No. That was quite deliberate and quite intentional. And the list of people who voted for it contains some names that should be ashamed of themselves for having supported it. We'll leave it at that. But with ordinary foodstuffs in the chain of commerce, it can rise to what's called strict liability. In other words, you don't have to prove negligence. If you hurt somebody with your food, you're on the hook for it. And that's why in theory at least, when the, say, FDA issues a recall, the companies go, yep, we're right with you, bub. And they don't usually fight about it because they're trying to avoid the liability, and plus they get a tax write-off for the loss. There's a recall right now for salmonella infected
ground beef,
and it's out in your neck of the woods.
Well, I don't eat ground beef. I mean, with the exception of the smoked sausage the other day. Maybe that's what I am. Maybe I'm ill from that.
Oh, and by the way, we got a follow-up from Lady B. Speaking of Bruce Lee, dude, I solved our Trump television soundbites problem. And I love this. We need a full-on audio lab for this. Brother Deacon Asa might find this to his liking. Let's overdub all his shit with poorly worded English. See, it's funny before we even know much beyond the setup. After all, aren't we always told to pay attention to what he does, not what he says? Dude, I'd pay money to see Trump talk about defending his master as a member of the Shaolin Temple. He could even make that cool neck-cracking move. I'd love to see his head on top of David Carradine's body in the opening credits when he sticks his wrists on the white-hot dragons on the side of the pot, and the old blind Shaolin master looks at him and says, time for you to go, because it's time for him to go. The Lady B continues and said, you're the kid with the golden arm, Bob. As Bruce Lee said, a wise man can learn more from a foolish question than a fool can learn from a wise answer. Dude, you epitomize patience, restraint, and decorum. You've achieved not only black belt cool, but, and this is another cowbell. We don't often have multi-cowbell correspondence, but this is one. You have achieved not only black belt cool, but black velvet painting cool. Embrace it. Wu-Tang forever, Lady B. God, if we ever get to do the new the fabulous renovated video friendly Horn Studios, we will the walls will be festooned with velvet Elvises and velvet dogs playing poker.
Let me revisit before I go and before you go a Clayton Moore story. Okay, I will urge you and the Horn family to go to YouTube and find a clip with David Letterman and Jay Thomas, a rather prominent radio guy and also TV and film actor who departed the scene several years ago, where he tells the story of working in local radio and Clayton Moore came to town to the remote from the car dealership. It's a funny, supposedly true story. And if you need a laugh in these days of universal brouhaha and terse moments, tense moments, check out that Jay Thomas Lone Ranger story with David Letterman. It'll bless your heart, friends.
It's too insane not to be true.
Yeah. And having worked in small-time radio, you know that it's got to be true just from the way those things were orchestrated. Yeah. Whenever a celebrity of any magnitude came to your deal, your event, well, it was big stuff.
See, I got to get Boss Man Wayne on here just to tell some of the stories that he's told me off air. He told me one time about his brother, Butch, great guy. Is a long time, or was a long time, I presume he's retired now, long time ABC cameraman. And did things like go and shoot video and carry on conversations with Castro. I mean, all over the world. He was way up there in the pecking order among union ABC cameramen. And, of course, we're back in the 70s. And he got his baby brother, Boss Man Wayne, a gig as a chauffeur. And Boss Man Wayne drove Howard Cosell around town.
Oh, God.
And I don't remember the particulars, and it would be far better if Boss Man Wayne told it. But it was on a road trip that we took together early on, and I was ruined. I was incapable. Because between that and a couple of the other stories he told me, I was incapable of human conversation. I couldn't.
Howard Cosell, speaking of sports, on the ABC.
Howard Cosell in the back of the limousine.
And Howard was a piece of work.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he was a brilliant man. Yeah.
Yeah. But he lets you know that you were not to trifle with his interpretation of reality and the facts and the stats.
Well, last night on that Monday Night Football game, you know, they've been doing this 100th anniversary of the NFL or whatever, 100 years of the NFL. And since it was Monday Night Football, they did a brief look back to Dandy Don. They showed Dandy Don in his Cowboys jersey, Dandy Don Meredith, and they had a picture of Frank Gifford and a picture of them all three with their gold jackets on, and of course
those Blazers
down in front. Howard Cosell.
And I'd
forgotten they mentioned it, but in that first season of Monday Night Football, also included the one and only, the unforgettable, the dean of them all, Keith Jackson.
Oh, yeah. Who did college sports mostly.
Oh, he was best. He was best when he was doing college.
Yeah.
And he somehow or another, he was so unflappable and so soothing and so southern that the heat of the action somehow, the action got elevated because he in turn was so usually calm, you know, until he got to the point where he was declaring, "It's war in the trenches."
And, yeah.
And those people don't exist. The NBC crew, none of the Fox crews, the CBS, none of them have, this is the geezer hour on the internet radio. None of them have the personality, either baseball or football.
Well, where did Fox get Joe Buck? Wasn't his daddy
that's just passing the DNA test.
Oh, but I mean, very lackluster. I mean, brought nothing that I could discern, and I watched all seven games.
Joe Buck, I think he must have used the word filthy 72 times, and yeah, he wasn't even talking about Trump.
Yeah. No. Yeah, and see, that's horrible when there's a crutch like that a broadcaster uses. Whenever you catch yourself doing that, or that someone brings it to your attention, you've got to stop doing it. Otherwise, it becomes so ingrained that you don't even know when you're doing it.
And Steve in New York reminds us, yes, they're Century 21 real estate jackets.
Yes.
And wasn't it Keith Jackson who popularized "Whoa, Nelly"? Yes, it was.
Wow. God, how long ago was Monday Night Football on? Was it 70, 60?
Oh, no, it started in the early 70s, yeah. It was a big leap of faith for the NFL, and it took off, and it was great.
Well, it was event viewing, really.
Yeah.
Well, once it caught on.
Probably the most famous single episode was the night that, and you could tell that he was shaken to his core when Howard Cosell announced the killing of John Lennon on
yes.
Monday Night Football.
God, I will not forget that night. I was at home listening to the radio. I was working at the phone company at the time back east in Virginia. And I think Sunday and Monday was my weekend, or maybe it was Monday and Tuesday.
I was on the air, and I very nearly got fired for breaking down in tears when like six bells came across from UPI over it.
Oh, well.
You know, I was counting them because it was December. The weather wasn't particularly bad. And, you know, you get up around 7-8 bells, and it's either tornadoes or the Russians.
Yeah, like, what could this be? Well, I remember I was working the day that Jim Croce died in a plane crash somewhere in Louisiana, as I recall. That was in 73. I was working the day I told you the other day about that multi-part podcast that Rachel Maddow did last year called Bagman.
Yeah.
Two words about Spiro Agnew. I was working the day Spiro Agnew resigned. Boy, that was big news. Even though we were in Southern Maryland, it was just up the road in Baltimore, maybe 60, 70 miles.
Yep.
Busted. Water.
And that's like I was getting, that's what I was getting at earlier. That meeting in Poland that Gordon Sondland suddenly had his recollection refreshed over.
Yeah.
That's the one where Pence came in and leaned in on the shakedown. And there's not a lot of noise being made about Pence, and I think for good reason, because they don't necessarily want to smarten up a chump. But he's up.
Well,
he's up to his helmet hair in this too.
That was the deal with Agnew. Nixon was already under a lot of heat because of Watergate, remember in 73, the Watergate, the Senate Watergate hearings and all that, and then not too long after that, the actual House impeachment inquiry. Well, the handwriting was on the wall in the minds of many regarding the fate of Nixon. But then when the local Baltimore attorneys, the federal attorneys, brought to the attention of Elliot Richardson, who was the attorney general at the time, of what was going on with Agnew, even as vice president, and corruption and bribe-taking and all kinds of stuff, they said, well, look, if Nixon goes, we can't very well have someone this corrupt stepping in to be president. Now, can we? So it was a 1-2 deal. They really had to figure a way to invite him to go away, and hopefully a replacement would be found that would be at least honest and honorable to some degree. Now, how we got Jerry Ford, I'll never know, you know, but we did. That's who we were stuck with. But God, can you imagine the nightmare of Nixon resigning and Agnew stepping in?
Well, Jerry Ford at the Nixon resignation, ideologically, you know, remember, he never really introduced any legislation, but he was the hardcore right-wing equivalent of a Jim Shorts Jordan.
Yeah.
Or a Mark Meadows. By the way, update from Trey in Kentucky, Stan, 87% of the vote in, and Democrat Andy Beshear is leading Governor Matt Bevin in Kentucky.
What's the percentage?
He didn't give me that, but he's leading. And that would be a big deal, especially since, you know, the little maggot Clavern rally was held last night in Lexington.
Yeah.
See, and just one last thing on the way out the door.
Okay.
You and I, well, me mainly, it was before you called in. But by putting by going through the details of Gordon Sondland's refreshment of his recollection.
Yeah.
We actually did more than the sitting chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee says he's willing to do. Precious Lindsay has declared that all of that is just a bunch of BS.
Yeah, I saw that.
And he's not going to read none of it, and you can't make him. I've written the whole process off. I think this is a bunch of BS. Why is he in the Senate? Why not quit?
Bob, I'm telling you, Bob, these people have no institutional or national memory. Don't they know what happened to the people who were slow to jump off the Nixon train 40-some years ago? Don't they remember? Haven't they read? Are they living in some kind of fantasy that, oh, it'll never happen to me, it'll never happen to Trump? You cannot get close to despicable people without getting some on you. It boggles my mind, man, I'm telling you. And maybe it's not the same, maybe we don't have the same caliber of people in the House and Senate today, or the judicial process is not as reliable now versus then. But it's that old thing of history may not repeat itself, but it sure as hell rhymes. And how can he be that? I can see supporting your guy. Okay, I can understand that. That's politics. But there comes a time in the proceedings when you have got to own up to what's going on. And most all of them did it. There was a guy named Charles Sandman, and I forget whether he was from California or New Jersey or somewhere, who was on the House Judiciary Committee, and almost until the last few days was as fervent a defender of Richard Milhouse Nixon as you could possibly be, until the smoking gun tape, the conversation 5 or 6 days after the Watergate break-in, showed without any benefit of contradiction that Nixon early on wanted to cover up the Watergate thing. okay? And hopefully, when Trump goes down, that he'll take a number of these senators, House members, and governors, and other hangers-on with him, who are just so eager to stay in good with him, because it's power attracts that type of
corruption
fancy. Yeah.
Oh, you know? And I've got an update, courtesy of Steve in New York and Mark in Florida. With 99% of the vote in Kentucky, Democrat Beshear leads Bevin 704,882 votes to 694,317, 49.4% to 48.6%.
Well, that's good. I forget how Kentucky does write-ins and absentees, whether they're counted later or whether they're part of the actual count of the night, and overseas ballots and different things. But God help us, that poor state could certainly use, and let's hope old Bert the Turtle McConnell, he's up in 2020. Let's hope that he's up and out. I mean, maybe it's too wishful thinking to stand in the face of reality, but man, his turn should come up where the goods are finally gotten on him. And
one hopes that not only does the worm turn, the turtle does too.
Well, what is the old biblical phrase? Beware, your sins will find you out. I'm no Bible scholar, but I know that does occur every now and again when we.
Yeah, and by the way, just to clear things up, no, Gerald Ford was not Speaker of the House. He did not become Vice President because he had to be actually nominated and nominated to be Vice President and confirmed.
Yeah, well, he was
minority leader.
Minority whip. Yeah, minority leader,
Well, was he leader or whip? Doesn't matter. We'll sort that out. The Horn
Ad Hoc Research Department can do that. No, he was minority leader.
But I got to get out of here because we've run way over. We've run way over because the conversation is indeed so scintillating and, in fact, so sparkling. Scott, have a good evening. And
I will, Bob. You too. And my best to the Horn family and to the Bob family.
All right. Thank you. You have a good night.
Take care.
Our buddy Scott, San Diego, happy to have found a high-quality smoked sausage in the Private Selection brand. Oh, and one last thing on the way out the door. Rand Paul, I mentioned him last night at the MAGAT rally when he showed up in front of the idiots wearing the Read the Transcript t-shirts. No, here, wear the t-shirt, Read the Transcript. And his only purpose was to come on and say that the whistleblower needs to be outed. And he was then interviewed and declared that Donald Trump has a Sixth Amendment right under the Confrontation Clause, the right to confront your accuser, that he has a Sixth Amendment right to know who the whistleblower is. He doesn't. The Sixth Amendment is a criminal rule that is predicated on processes which are likely to take the liberty of a human, of an American, or someone in America away from them, and that's where the Confrontation Clause comes in. But, of course, Stuart Varney didn't, over on Fox Business, didn't call him. He said, well, the Sixth Amendment is pretty clear. It is part of the Constitution, part of the Bill of Rights. It says you get to confront your accusers. So I think it's very clear the only constitutional mandate here, if someone will accuse you of something that might remove the president from office, for goodness sake, shouldn't they come forward to present their accusations in person? No. Because the Sixth Amendment applies to criminal proceedings, and as noted on this program earlier and frequently, impeachment is not a criminal proceeding. And Rand Paul is not very good at constitutioning. He's probably a center because he wasn't very good at ophthalmologicaling either. So, again, thanks to everybody who jumped in and helped us take a bite out of the deficit this evening. Thank you so much. Thanks very kindly. It looks like we will close the program with Ralph's challenge
still on the table, unless, let me check here. No, it got met. Thank you. Thank you, kind anonymous contributor. Ralph's challenge got met, so we will finish the evening at $305. Thank you to Mitchell. So we're down 305, 295, 285. So thank you. Thank you to Mitch and to kind anonymous friend. Thank you to Ralphs. Thank you to Brian. Thank you to Joseph. Thank you to Glenn. Thank you all very, very kindly. And thank you for meeting Steve in New York's challenge as well. Thank you very kindly, because come tomorrow, 485 is a lot better than 525. And thanks for getting it down off the 400 number, because 6 would have been even worse. Thank you all so very much. Very much. And thanks to all of you who support the program through your subscriptions and through your a la carte contributions. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program, no matter how you so do. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky in the chat room this evening. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. I hope we can get past that whole Superman thing. Oh, dear, what a question. What if Moscow Mitch, Brother Deacon asks, has a stroke and Bashir has to pick his replacement? He probably would have to replace party with party. But at that point in time, you might find somebody who wanted to do business. I didn't know turtles could have strokes. Because Moscow Mitch ain't no ain't no who man. But thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Welcome home, son.